Welcome to Sodom and Gomorrah! Stephanie and I survived VHS Fest numero siete.
You were digging deep for that.
Yeah, siete, ocho, nueve, diez. How was it, Steph? How was VHS Fest 7? Let's get right into it.
I mean, I had a great time, despite the fucking sweltering
fucking hot,
heat.
Bro.
So hot.
So hot.
So hot. And this was our first time going as a family. We brought our son.
Cotton Candy was there.
This is
stole the show.
It's all new adventures with this dog.
Don't fucking touch me. I'm hot.
He was great. I mean, I thought for like, I was a little bit worried that he was going to have heat stroke for a little, like an hour.
I was worried I was going to have heat stroke. Man. It was fine though, because everybody you walked up to and hugged was equally as gross as you were. So it didn't really matter.
Everyone was moist.
And it wasn't even like the hottest, but it was the hottest.
The sun was just blazing, man.
And like, I don't day drink. So like, we got there at like, we got there when the gates opened at 3. We started drinking pretty soon after, like right when we got out of the car.
Well, yeah.
So 3:30.
Because you just don't know how to ease your way in.
I need the social lubricant. Yeah. I'm very like outgoing on the podcast, but in real life, I just don't like, I like my group of friends in small amounts, you know?
Yeah.
I don't like productions when there's tons of people.
Yeah,
I
get it.
And there just gets draining.
There were a lot of people there.
And I could probably come off as a dick, and I don't mean to. It's just like, there's always so much I could take of it. And
no, I get it.
But it was awesome seeing everybody. And it's cool to see every year. With that being said, like, it's cool every year to see like the numbers of people just growing when we hang out.
Because
we didn't go last year.
Yeah, we have a nice group of people that we hang
super
out with.
Super nice
there.
People. Super nice. Yeah, but I was real greasy, grossy. I drank so much. I only ate like a fucking English muffin before we left. And then I was thinking like, I'll get food at the concession stand. Well, the concession stand ended up being like 5 or 6. So by the time that ended up happening, I don't think, what time did we get food? Like 8?
Oh, we ate really late.
Yeah.
At least 7.
I'm surprised I wasn't throwing up. Because I was like, at one point I was leaning on a car and I was like, this is a stranger's car. I was like, I shouldn't be leaning on a stranger's car. And I felt bad. And Ben's like, who fucking cares? And I was like, I don't know. I just don't want to be a dickhead.
All I know is that you left me for at least an hour. I think.
When?
And then you came back so drunk.
That's because Ben was like, I was walking around with Ben and we were talking to people, and then people would inevitably, here's a beer, have a beer. And I would drink the beer. Here's a shot, have a shot. And then Ben was walking around with like bullet bourbon that Joe from Movie Dumpster got him. So it was just stuff being handed. And then I want to say thank you to everybody that gifted me stuff, because I felt like the Godfather there. Everybody was like walking up to me like, Godfather, here's an offering I bring you. There's just like a lot of cool stuff. I didn't buy anything this year, mostly because like I was just in my, I think this was like the most fun I had at VHS Fest since we've been going.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because I did get really drunk, and I don't usually get drunk like that. I usually get like a good buzz.
Yeah.
I get high. I got high and I was fucking drunk.
Yeah.
And I got super, super high. So it was a really good time. I did walk around. There was so many vendors there this year, too.
So many.
I was disappointed because there was no bands playing on Saturday.
Yeah,
that was a letdown.
Yeah.
Because I liked that part of it. But it's always about, like, the tailgating aspect for me. It's like hanging out with friends. And it was nice to have Nandor there. And you did an awesome job with them, as usual.
Thanks. I try.
Yeah, it was great seeing all of our friends, making some new friends. We hope to see you again. And if you guys come out to the 24-hour Hearthon later this year, hope we will see you there, too, maybe. But Tom, Crummy,
the Mats,
Kay. There's just so many fucking
Allison,
people.
We met Allison finally.
Allison was great. What a treasure. I always tend to gravitate towards the Mats because they're more my energy. You know?
Yeah.
I just stick with them and I just act stupid and they laugh and they're like my little guys that just clap every time I say something. And I'm like, yes, I'm not leaving this area. Just keep clapping.
Feed your ego.
Yeah. And then I realized that one of Steph's coworkers was in attendance, and it was the first time I was meeting her. And I was like, she probably thinks I'm a piece of shit. Like,
well, that you like later on, you're like, I'm sorry if I embarrassed you in front of your coworker.
Cause I was just like, cause that's going to be a lot. Like, I like to open the box of Jessup slowly.
And, yeah. And you did.
People,
I mean, full immersion.
I mean, but people tell you when they meet me, I'm not usually like, when people meet me and they hear me on the podcast beforehand, that when they meet me, they're usually like, okay, you're more subdued in real life.
Cause
I don't want to act like that 24/7.
You really aren't. Yeah. I mean, it's like your podcast thing. You're not necessarily like that all the time.
But I was like that at VHFS7 because sure I were. Was drunk.
You sure were.
Sippy, sippy, sippy. We also survived John's 80s no dancing actually occurred party.
Yeah.
But that was more like, it was just chill.
It was fun.
The
it was fine.
Floor,
we
the
hung
dance
out.
Floor was open. The dance floor was empty.
We ate a lot of food.
Yes, I was
cool.
I John needed to be like Lewis Tully in Ghostbusters, where they're at the party. Lewis Tully has his party,
yeah, yeah.
And he's like, nobody's dancing. And he's like, well, maybe if we start dancing, people join yeah. in. And then the terror dog comes in the closet, you know, which would have been Gimli.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But no, there was no dancing. But it was fun, as usual, seeing all good buddies.
Yeah, in attendance.
We peaced out pretty early that, though.
What, that night?
Yeah. We were like...
Well, we did a VHS fest, too. For the first movie came on, we were like, we got to go.
Yeah, Nando,
it's time to go.
Nando was done, dude.
He was exhausted.
He was done, and well,
I was
like,
done.
We were there standing out in the sun for like 7 hours, yeah. 7.5 hours. I was like, we got to take this boy home. Plus, it was really annoying because like all around the people that live around the Mahoning Drive-In were lighting off fireworks,
yeah,
and I
was
like,
this is
fucking stupid. And it was Frankenhooker. I've seen it a million times, so stay around for that. Yeah. I didn't even go in the fucking concession area.
I know. Well,
that's how drunk I got. I'm usually in there like 20 times.
You would have passed out from the heat. It was so hot in there. I don't know how anyone was in there for any extended period of time, because just waiting in line for my burger in a bag was
burger in a bag.
Almost unbearable.
Gotta get that burger in a bag, bro.
Always.
So it was a great time. Oh, I wanted to mention this story too, because it's fucking funny. I didn't mention it, but last Sodom and Gomorrah, we were talking about our vacation, right? And so shortly after our vacation, you know, if you do an Airbnb, you got to leave like the other person a review.
Yeah, I totally fucking forgot about this.
So I was like, all right, I'm not going to be a dickhead, but I'm going to give an honest review of all the disappointments of this place, you know, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And so I leave my review, and literally like 5 minutes after I left the review, the woman messages me and was just like, oh, you're clueless. You know, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. My Airbnb has great reviews. And I was like, well, I'm just giving you my personal experience. And I've seen a couple other people say some things about it too. But my main thing when we went there was like that she had dogs off leash walking around. And it just doesn't make sense to do that as a person who's running an Airbnb. You're going to put yourself in a bad position.
Yeah.
And if you have a dog friendly Airbnb, then other people are bringing their dogs there. Why the fuck would you have your other dogs running wild?
Right. It's like multiple things. Like, you could have people staying there who are afraid of dogs, and that's bad.
Yeah.
You could have a situation where we have a dog that we don't let off leash, and I don't want dogs approaching my dog that are off leash.
I was like, you can't have dogs running around like that when you're hosting Airbnb. And she's like, I can, it's my property. It's my house. I was like, okay, cool. You're a little kid. I was like, also, there's no control of the thermostat. She's like, yeah, you have to tell the person who lives next door to adjust the thermostat. You never complained about it. And I was like, okay, would have been nice to know that. Like,
it was not clear.
I wouldn't have fucking rented a place where I had to go to the neighbor to change the thermostat every 2 fucking seconds, dumbass. And then she's like, well, that's funny that you mentioned that, but you know, you weren't in danger at any time and you know it. But it's funny that you say that, because the man was just yelling at the woman the entire stay at the top of his lungs. And I was like, you're talking to the man. My name's Jesse. I am a man. And I was like, and I never raised my voice to my wife, so I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Oh, but man.
Maybe she was just listening to maybe just me being stupid.
No, I don't know. She was screeching, just trying to be an asshole. And she was like, yeah, well, I think that there was abuse going on in there.
Yeah. It literally went from like, oh yeah, you should keep your dogs on a leash, to you shouldn't beat your wife in the face. Right. And I was just like, well, that's escalated. It's fucking weird.
Oh my God. That was like the craziest like interaction ever.
Yeah. It went back and forth, and I was like trying to be like, not like a child, but it's very hard for me not to be a child when people are being a child. So we went back and forth, and I was like, it's cool. I'll never come back to your dump ass place again. And she's like, you're not welcome. Smiley face emoji. So that's what she kept doing. She kept doing like passive aggressive shit with her emojis.
Oh my God.
Which I hate when people do that with their emojis.
Yeah.
Emojis are meant for fun.
Right.
Don't be a passive aggressive with your poop emoji.
And poop. Well, poop emojis are fun.
Yeah.
But if used in the right way.
Don't be a jerk with your poop emoji, though. Yeah. Be nice. Be nice, poop.
Oh, my God.
I wanted to tell you this, too. I went down a fucking rabbit hole the other day at work. I don't know how this ended up happening, but I was on YouTube, as I do when it starts getting slow towards the end of the night at work. And I'll just be like, you know, looking at whatever. And I start to look at like, Lego enthusiasts.
No.
And their crazy collections.
Oh my God.
Crazy collection stuff. Oh my God. And I'm not like trying to make fun of people and what they like, but it's just like to a degree that like, you know, I like horror stuff and everything, but like my house is decorated in horror stuff, but the level of this Lego stuff was just out of control. Like a lot of them have like their own Lego cities that they build in their house, and they're so fucking involved stuff. It's like their whole basement is a Lego city.
Oh my God.
And they have it on a raised platform
Yeah.
and they got to walk through the city, and it's actually super impressive, but it's like kind of cringy, because right? You're just like, it's like this guy, he's like, Pop Culture Alley, and it's all like the pop culture, it's like Legos. And then they build like designer series Legos that you can special order Lego, and then they go to like drops where like the Lego stores will have special drops of Lego pieces, like unique Lego pieces that you can just use for your cities or whatever.
Oh my god.
And like a fence or something and they'll go on like the opening day, and you get like a cup. And it's like a big like Slurpee cup, and then whatever you put in the cup is like $5.
What?
And these nerds are going crazy getting all these Lego pieces and stuff.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and then there's this other place. I want to say it's in like Tennessee or South Carolina, called like Brick House or Brick World or something like that. And it's just like they sell vintage like Lego collections, whatever they are.
Yeah.
And I just went down to super deep. But they like to be called. AFLs. That's what the Lego people like to be called.
Why? What does that mean?
Adult fans of Lego.
Oh my god.
Because they kept saying it on the thing. I was like, what is fucking an AFL? Or AFL, or whatever. Yeah. I don't know if I could say it. And I was like, what is this? Is this like some sex thing with the Lego pieces up the butt? What is that? So I Googled it, and I was like, they don't like to be called Bricksters because it's offensive. So you got to call them AFLs.
Well, are kids called Bricksters?
No,
that's just an offensive term.
It's like
term.
A derogatory term for someone who likes Legos.
I've never even heard that.
No, Brickster. Come at me, Brickster. But all their things are called like brick. Tom's Bricks and on YouTube or somebody's Bricks.
But you can't be a Brickster.
This one girl was obsessed with all the Disney Legos, and she had her whole room. She painted the sky blue. So the back of the town looked like it was blue, and she had the Lego castle, the Magic Kingdoms. And I was watching it. I watched like literally like an hour and a half of it. And Pete's like, what the fuck are you watching? Are you into this? I was like, I'm not, but I'm trying to be.
I'm trying to be into this.
So bad.
Holy crap. It's like, okay. It's like when we watched that fucking Merpeople docuseries.
That was cool though.
But we were like, this is a world that exists that I did not know exist.
Yeah.
And it's like blew my mind that there are all these people who are so into like being a like mer people, like a mer person.
I
need to get out more.
I think the mer people thing's kind of cool. It's fun. I think you have to have like some kind of like athletic ability to do that.
Oh, especially the performers.
I like Legos. I'm not trying to knock Legos or anything like that. I don't really like, for me, it's just like, it wasn't like that they liked it. It was how much they liked it that was interesting to me.
Did anyone talk about how much like money their collections are worth?
Oh, these people like living paycheck to paycheck to pay for a Lego habit.
Okay.
Like, I'm telling you right now. Like, this is John Ashmore Blu-ray collecting that's happening.
Okay,
you know,
okay.
Ultimate Collector's Edition, John Ashmore. You know, that's what's happened with these Lego people. It's fucking nuts. Like, you know, you go to Joe Ashmore's house. Joe Ashmore?
John.
Yeah. you go to his house, and he's got like his like Star Wars commandos in like little chests, like 40 deep, you know? It's like that.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Okay.
You know, but it's like Legos, and it's a whole basement. It's
because like I guess the thing is also, I mean,
but they're very serious about their towns. They're like, I don't like the layout of this town. I want to move the beach over here, and I want the hospital to be here. And then
Lego beach?
Yeah, they build it. They build everything.
But like nothing like caves in the Lego world could ever be MIB. Because the whole point of Legos
is you
open it.
So I watched another thing. It was them going to a Lego convention.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a horror convention, but it was all Legos. And you should have saw how much some of these Lego sets were. And they're like, that's a great deal. Get it. Oh, this is a
misprint. Because it's like rare.
Oh, look at this. A misprinted Chewbacca. His face is on the wrong side. It's printed on the wrong side.
Oh my God.
$55.
Do people walk around like in Lego costumes?
There was people dressed up, but not like as Legos. Oh. Like just, they're all, it's like nerd culture, overlaps.
I'm just like intrigued by this. I didn't know it was a thing.
I'm sure there's people that love Legos that are into the Lego thing that are also into horror, you know, overlap of like nerd culture. But it was interesting. And the one guy, I can't remember his name. I want to say it was like Penguin Bricks or Duck Bricks. Duck Bricks.
Okay. I like that.
Look this dude up. He is like a young Asian dude. He is like super formal. And his YouTube starts with him like backing down like a hallway. And the whole time I was thinking, this is John Ashmore's basement future. Because he's walking down the basement backwards, and it's like a hallway. And from floor to ceiling, it's Lego stuff.
Oh my God.
It's all Lego stuff. He has the Lego Titanic that he built. It's just like, I can't even tell you what it looks like. You'd have to just watch it to just get like a feel for how insane it is. But he like knows like this is edition 103 that was released in such and such, and Lego sends him all like the stuff, and they do reviews where like he builds the thing, reviews it, and then takes it apart, puts it back in the box.
Crap.
Yeah, next level shit.
Yeah.
What else have we been watching recently?
Well, we watched Alone.
Oh,
was it season 9? I think season 9.
Nine.
Yes.
I thought it was 7, but 9 is fine.
I think it's 9.
9 is fine.
Dude, that show's so good. Mm-hmm. Like, I would never, I don't ever.
I think that's because we grew up with Survivor Man and we kind of liked Survivor Man.
I love Survivor Man.
I wasn't like a Bear Grylls ball.
No, because especially when you found out that he was sleeping in a hotel at night, because then you were like, this fucking phony, dude.
Yeah.
You're a poser.
He is a poser. Then he got stung by bees, and I was like, that's pretty cool.
Remember that he drank his own piss out of the snake skin?
He's like, I gotta keep up in the ante. I gotta drink my piss with my bee face.
Dude, when he got stuck by the bees, that was the fucking funniest.
Yeah, because you wanted him to just like, I wanted one of the shows to end with like a gorilla beating him to death.
Oh my God.
And that would have been like the end.
But he seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah. Survivor Man, was it Lee Stroud or something like that? Yeah. He was like more like kind of what, Alone does, but Alone is like contestants. It's not just him, but it's not like a person by himself, and it's like 10 contestants or whatever, and they have to survive the longest out in the Alaskan, was it Alaska?
This was the first season that it was in the Labrador region of Canada, which I don't know anything about.
That's right
Canada. That's where like polar bears live there. But
all these dudes were horny to hunt a bear, a grizzly bear or a polar bear. I'm like, are you fucking stupid?
Yeah.
You ain't going to kill no grizzly bear.
Not, they, guess what? No one did.
No one did. They thrived on squirrel meat.
Squirrels and grouse. The best part was like every single person would like leave. They'd be in their tent. They'd be like, oh, wait, that's a squirrel.
Yeah.
And they'd go out and the squirrel be like, I'm here. I'm here. Kill me.
That's what I kept saying. Squirrels are so fucking stupid. If they just shut the fuck up, they wouldn't get eaten. That's like, I was like, they're just like, I'm here, I'm Tasty Chicken McNugget, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, dead.
Oh my God, so many dead squirrels. Yeah. I would like to know the actual tally of how many fucking squirrels they ate in this season.
They did eat a lot of squirrelies.
Yeah.
I was sad for the squirrelies, but...
And two guys ate beavers, and the one dude got so fucking sick that he had to go home.
Oh, yeah.
He was just...
I got some fucking nasty parasite.
Yeah, apparently, I guess you can get Giardia.
Cook the shit out of that. I would be cooking that meat till it was all like just char.
Yeah, char. Cancer char.
I was telling stuff I wouldn't survive because I wouldn't be able to eat fish. I would be like gagging and trying to eat fish.
And that's what a lot of people survive on.
Yeah.
Fish, seaweed.
They used to be on.
Berries.
That show used to be on like History Channel.
It's on History Channel.
Netflix picked it up.
I think it's still on History Channel.
The new season, at least.
Yeah.
The last two seasons.
Maybe. Damn, it's good, man. It's
fucking good.
The editing of the show is funny, though, because they make it seem like bad shit happens all the time. But then really, it's just like, I just stepped into puddle water.
The editing is very, I think that what I like about it is like it's more like down to earth and serious. And the people who compete in it more often than not have like an appreciation for the outdoors
and they're not
trying to like exploit it, and they're kind of like look at it like this is a more pure way of living where I'm killing and eating my own meat.
Right. Like
I was home, I'd be eating meat, but someone would be doing it for me. Right, so at least here I'm connected to
it. I know the origin of my meat.
So it's like I like this show in that regard because it just seems like more honest to me.
Yeah. No, it's a passion for a lot of these people because that's like what they want to do. They like teach other people to live in the wilderness and like, I don't know. I have no problem with it, you know? Don't I mean, have. I have a problem with all those dead squirrels though.
But, yeah, squirrels are fine. I mean, the good thing about squirrels is they're everywhere. That's like why I found the baby out front.
Oh. That's a nice segue to little baby.
We always say like springtime is like squirrel suicide season because like squirrels are just coming trying to run under your tires.
Yeah. But this is, I mean, I guess summertime is squirrel baby season.
Summertime. It was a cruel summer for that mom.
Squirrel baby time.
We think that the mom of the baby I found in the street got run over in a car by a car right out front of our house because there's a squirrel pancake.
Yeah, she's mushed.
And then we were doing housework and I was loading up the back of Steph's car and I heard like this chittering Chicky Ran noise. And I was like, it sounded like it was coming from above me because it was pretty loud. And I happened to glance down and I was like, that's like a little pinky on the ground, but it was like way bigger than a pinky. I never saw a baby squirrel. I've only seen like baby hamsters.
Yeah, yeah.
Baby rats and like rodents. Yeah. I never saw like a big squirrel. Like, I guess a squirrel's a rodent, but never like a squirrel. And I was fucking shocked at how big it was. And like, you'd see its little pinky tail and everything. And it was doing the Chicky Ran noise. It was like calling for its mom.
Yeah. And oh, that's so sad.
So immediately like I ran and I got Steph and I'm like screaming through the mailbox, Steph, I almost said there's a naked squirrel outside. And I was like, there's a baby squirrel outside. So we came out, we got in a box or whatever. And I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to raise a squirrel. Like, I don't have my own children. I don't know how to
I have no milk to from which to nurse this baby. I have no
clothes that will fit this little gentleman. So I was like, we were trying not to touch it because I was like, I don't want to get our stent on it if we're going to try to find the mom. So anyway, Steph ended up, I was like taking some stuff to the dump, and I was like, call some places and we'll put them in a box up in the bedroom so he's safe. And then so Steph called a couple places and found out, like, got in communication with like a wildlife refuge by us.
Yeah.
They told us to try to put it back in the tree like 8 feet up. So I climbed up there and I like screwed the cardboard box into the side of the tree, and we waited like 3 or 4 hours. And they told us if it was still in there after that time that we could bring it in. And yeah. I went out there and he was still there. So
yeah, but I had to text some pictures.
But he's bruised.
Yeah, I had to text pictures because they wanted to see if the baby was injured, because otherwise I would have taken it in right away. Yeah. And there was some bruising on that little babe. Well, you did eventually see the nest, right? The nest was what? I mean, how high?
It was like taller than our house.
Yeah, it was so high. It was
at the very tippity top of a tree, a bunch of leaves. And I was like, so close to quitting my job and just tell him I gotta raise a squirrel now. I'm a squirrel daddy, because I was just like, I would love to just be able to raise a squirrel.
So cute.
And just like formula feeding it, and then I would have a pet squirrel in the house that was potty trained and wear a diaper, and I'll call Mr. Marbles.
Oh man, but we dropped her off, and
it was a good thing. I hope
she survives.
Yeah, I mean,
They estimated her to only be a couple days old because she didn't have any fur and her eyes were still closed. Well,
I'm glad we found her, because if somebody else did, if no one found her, that squirrel would have been dead because it was on the fucking blacktop. It would have just cooked like an egg.
Yeah.
And then secondly, someone's dog probably would have came over and just ate it.
Yeah. Or would have got hit by a car.
Or would have got mushed.
Yeah.
Would have been straight up mush.
Oh, that poor little baby. We didn't even give her a name.
Mr. Marbles.
Him, her, it.
Marbles. I told you to go in there and say, this squirrel's name is Jesse now, by the way, because I'm the one that found it.
They said if I contact them that they'll give me updates, but I'm afraid to. Like, I don't want to know.
Yeah, the second your car pulled out, it died.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it was fine, and we went to go release it, and a fucking a hawk swooped down and ate it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how it be sometimes.
Oh, my God.
We also started watching the new American Gladiators docuseries on Netflix.
It's enjoyable.
That shit's good.
It's enjoyable.
I mean, especially if you grew up in the 90s or you grew up watching American Gladiators. It's a show that, like I've said even before this, like, why don't they bring this fucking show back now? It could be so good.
I might be so worried about like injuries, liability, all that shit.
Bro, you have people sign waivers. Dude, the 90s, nowadays.
80s and 90s were a different time.
Yeah, but if you could do a show like Alone where you're dumping people off in the woods, I guess you could do a show like American Gladiators. You just got to fucking make people sign everything.
Yeah.
They just like, I think now it's like people have better contracts, so they wouldn't be, they'd be able to fuck people as much as they did back then.
Which
is what you learn when you watch the docuseries, how much the fucking Gladiators got fucked financially, which sucks. But I mean, it was really cool seeing a lot of my favorite Gladiators like Nitro and shit, which it seems like a really fun dude.
Nitro is the best.
First, when you're watching, be like, oh, he's kind of cocky, kind of like whatever. But then the more you watch the show, you're like, he's awesome.
Yeah.
And the stories, I was like, the whole time I watched it, I was like, I wish they just would have made, they would make like a, what is it? Who is he friends with? Is it Laser?
Yeah, I think it was Laser.
Or
was
Turbo. Like,
oh man, all their names are
Nitro.
Like,
I think it's Nitro and Turbo. I think they're buddies.
Yeah, they were like best friends.
And they always do like these little like cartoon animations of them while they're like telling a story, and they're fucking great.
Yeah.
Like, especially when they're fighting, because he's talking about roid rage and how they got into a fight over music, and he bit him and he's like, he started biting me. And then like he punched him and he got a fucking huge black eye. And then they went into a restaurant
and they just partied.
Yeah. It seemed like a super fun time in the 90s, especially when they're just doing drugs.
Oh my God.
Banging,
drugs, drinking, sex,
roiding it up. But like they always talk about how like the much roids they were doing, but how much banging they were doing. But you got little atrophied nuts,
right?
It's weird.
But you wonder, like, were they doing roids all the time? Because a lot of them said, like, yeah, I would do it in the off season just to keep up my like physique.
Yeah,
you know, it's maybe like, I don't know.
Every bodybuilder,
they were
does
huge.
They all do they roids. Were. You don't get that big without doing roids. Yeah. It's just the way it is. Even Arnold Schwarzy did roids.
I'm excited to finish the series. That was really good.
Yeah, it looks really, really good. All right, what are we drinking, baby?
I have Hazy Rider Pomegranate, which is a limited release. It's a hazy India Pale Ale with pomegranate. Love City Brewing, local to Philadelphia.
I'm drinking the same thing, but it is the mango variety, another limited release. I like the pomegranate one more, but yeah, this one's also
the mango is good. It doesn't have farty. It doesn't have a farty mango flavor. It's like at the end, it's nice. Pomegranate is better though.
Pomegranate is better.
I really like Love City. So if you can get their beer, you should get some.
It's much better than what I was drinking at VHS Fest, which was gnarly garbage.
Oh, I don't know what you were drinking.
I was drinking...
We brought Modelo.
Modelo Especial.
Yeah.
And then I handed Steph her first Modelo Especial, and Nandor knocked it out of my hand and just exploded. And all over we were there for like 2 minutes. And I was like, this is going to be a great day. And Steph looked at me so annoyed. I was like, listen. And then she's like, you blamed it on him. I was like, he knocked it out of my hand. He literally knocked it out of my hand. Well, I'm not blaming him. This is what fucking happened. I can't believe you're blaming him for that.
Typical family outing.
All right, Steph, what is the Sodom and Gomorrah guide for today's episode? If you would, my please.
All right, we have 4 movies on the docket today. Devonsville Terror from 1983, Too Beautiful to Die from 1988, Nothing Underneath 1985, and The Appointment 1982.
Oh man, it sounds like a lot of awesome movies that just really disappoint.
I mean, one of them, I think, redeems itself in the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. The Devonsville Terror. What did you say it was from? 1983?
Yep, 83.
Vinegar Syndrome recently put this out, so you can buy it off of them, and it is available on Amazon Prime. I believe if you have the Shudder, John, it's free. It is directed by the guy who did Boogeyman, which is not great, but it does have like one of the coolest soundtracks of like an early horror movie, and I think that kind of overshadows the fact that the movie's not really that good, but people seem to think it's like great, but it's very boring. But the soundtrack for the Boogeyman's fucking awesome because it's like catchy Moog synthesizer. So Tim Krug, good job. That's his name, Krug's.
Krug with the Moog.
But the movie itself is like very, very slow. The Boogeyman, it's not great. But it like has moments where it's like this weird, like hypnotic surrealism. So it keeps you watching, it keeps you interested. The director's name is he's German. It's
Oli Lomel.
Oli. See, I thought it was like, I thought Oli was Louis. I thought like it was German for Louis. So I thought like Louis Lomel would be better.
Louis Lomel. I like it.
Yeah. So that's what I kept saying his name Louis in my head, but Oli, I guess Oli makes sense.
I don't know. Oli, Ali. I don't know.
Louis Lomel's cool.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. Anyway, he had like, he also had like, if you look pictures of him, he's a character. His mustache looks like the hands of a clock where like they're both pointing in different directions and they're separated. Very, very interesting. So
I thought I would get a picture of him, but nope.
Really? Yeah, you should. I did.
Oh, on IMDb?
No, on Google. Well, I don't go on IMDb.
Excuse me.
So a little trivia on the director. He directed 17 serial killer movies in 4 years. And here's some of them. Baseline Killer, Killer Picton, Night Stalker, Zodiac Killer, BTK Killer, which is funny because I guess that's Bind, Torture, Kill, Killer.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the dumbest fucking thing ever. Green River Killer, Black Dahlia, Curse of the Zodiac, Son of Sam, Manson Family Cult, DC Sniper. And guess who plays the DC Sniper?
Who?
Ken Foree.
No.
Yeah. He made all these like in the early 2000s.
Holy crap. It's
fucking terrible. They're all rated like 1 to 2.5 on IMDb. They're like beyond dog
shit. I mean, when you're turning movies out that quickly, they can't be good.
He's not a good director. Like he has, I think one of his first movies, like one of my favorite movies of him is called like The Tenderness of Wolves, which is like another serial killer movie that he made like in the 70s.
Is he trying to tell us something perhaps?
Yeah, he's a serial killer. He was on the serial killer John before all the kids were.
Right.
but that movie's really, really cool. And like they made that like in like a soundstage, like opera house type thing, really, really, really low budget. It's super creepy. So if you go watch Tenderness of Wolves, like check that movie out. Boogeyman's like fine. I don't think it's great, but I love the soundtrack for it. But this movie, he also directed, stars Donald Pleasance, who's in it for a total of like 10 minutes. And he's in his doctor's office every single time. He's hypnotizing people about witches.
Okay.
He's pulling mealworms from these wounds he has in the form of stigmata because he finds out like he's cursed because his ancestors are the ones that like
Killed the witches?
Killed the witches and stuff like that.
So yeah. He has the stigmata.
There's all these flashbacks to
that
like...
That makes sense.
All these the flashbacks to like sweaty pilgrims and they're like, burn, burn. And there's this fucking the best scene ever. It's like in the beginning of the movie where they're burning a witch and they're like, burn, witch, burn. And everybody's spitting on her.
Yeah.
And she spits back at them. And then another person comes by and spits on her and she spits back at them. And then another person goes on for like 10 minutes.
Oh my God.
By the end, her face is just dripping in sweat and spit. She got spit dripping off of her face. It's
oh
like,
oh my God.
I was like, how many is this gonna keep happening? It was like a skit. It was like a fucking SNL skit or something. Yeah. It was so strange. Suzanne, I'm not gonna really get into the story, but let me give you some fun facts first.
Oh, do you want me to read the synopsis?
Yeah, do that.
Dr. Wortley investigates a 300-year-old witch's curse in the New England town of Devonsville. Three liberated, assertive women move into town, which angers the bigoted, male-dominated town fathers.
Yeah, true that.
One of the women is a reincarnate...
I want my woman barefoot and pregnant. You better get out there, bitches.
One of the women is a reincarnation of the witch who proceeds to exact revenge on the town males.
She comes to school because she wants to be a teacher of... Hold on, what did I say?
She comes to school because she wants...
rhyme that. She comes to the town city
because she wants to be a school teacher.
And so she goes there to be a teacher and she's like teaching whatever. And like, she's like teaching the kids about like God, whatever. And the kids are like, well, you know, what's up with God? And she's like, yeah, well, you know, a lot of people nowadays say that God is a man, but God could be a woman. And then an old guy's like looking over and he overhears it. And he's like, that's a witch. And he starts telling everybody in town, like,
oh my God.
Oh shit, she a witch. Yeah. She a witch. Let's fight. And then, like, yeah, all this kind of shit starts happening because, you know.
And then the Spanish Inquisition shows up.
Well, there's all these, like, so Suzanne Love from Boogeyman, she returns. She plays the lead in this. She is fucking so gorgeous, certifiable boner fuel.
Okay.
Faux show. Many a time she bears breasts. Many a time I pitch my tents.
Wait, is she the redhead?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
People say like, oh, she's kind of cute. I think she's fucking hot. I love her. I love her so much. But anyway, she was Louis Lamel's wife.
Oh my God, Louis Lamel.
She was Louis Lamel's wife. So that's why she was in the first one. And a little bit of another thing here is she was the heiress to the DuPont fortune.
Oh.
So she has like hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So Louis Lamel was probably like, right. I want to make another movie. You could be in it. You pay for it.
Right.
And she's like, fine. Okay.
And he's like, I want to make 30 serial killer movies. You could be in all of them.
Oh, they were divorced at that point. Okay. Because she's like, this guy's a loser. This guy's a total fucking.
How much of her money did he get, though, in the divorce?
I don't know. Germans.
I mean.
He probably blitzkrieged that bank account like a motherfucker. But really, the only reason to watch this movie is like the last 10 minutes. So anyway, this teacher comes into this town and then. People,
she maybe bears a breast or two.
She bears breasts in like forms of like the males that are there are like having these visions of her.
Oh.
And she'll be like tits out in the mirror like, oh yeah, you want to be sucking on these things for free? And they're like, oh, for free, yeah. And then they have dreams about her like, oh yeah, you want to suck on these for free? And they're like, for free? Yeah. That's like what every guy in town keeps having these visions of her.
So basically they want to murder a bitch because they're having sex dreams about her.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of anything she's actually done. Typical of a man.
Well, there's like the old guy from Office Space is in this.
What old guy? Milton?
No, not Milton. Remember, I showed you the picture of him. He's like the old turtle looking guy with the glasses.
Who's in a million movies.
He's in a million movies. He's in Office Space. He plays like one of the guys that's coming in and giving everybody like performance reviews and everybody's all scared. But he's in it and he's younger.
But he looks fucking weird.
And he looks weird. He's like a creeper and he's supposed to be a creeper. And he runs like a little shop, like a local, like small town shop where they have like a little bit of everything. Like a shoppy, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Not artisanal.
No, it's a shoppy.
But she goes there to start getting her groceries, groceries. And he's like, he becomes infatuated with her and he's like blowing cum loads in his pants.
Oh.
And
do they show that?
Eventually he starts having dreams of her or whatever. And she comes back the next day and he's like, oh my God. Oh, also he killed his wife. He killed his wife before she got there. He suffocated his wife with a pillow. And she can see, for some reason, that he killed his wife.
Oh.
And so she's like, and so they're talking to everyone. He's like, yeah, my wife died, but she never listened to anything I said. And she's like, that's the shame because you seem like a really intelligent man with a lot to say and you should be respected. And he's like, thank you for saying that. Now, I had a dream that you would let me suck on your things for free. And she's like, well, that's not real. And I'm not offering that up at this time.
Oh my God.
So she leaves or whatever. And then he's like, oh, that's it. She's a witch. We got to fucking get this bitch. We got to get. And so there's another woman that moved into town. She's doing like research. Like, I don't know what, like
on witches.
There's just characters introduced, but they're not really in the movie because the movie's like an hour and 20 minutes right. at best. Okay. It's very short. She's doing research on like the lake because she thinks the lake's poisoned or the town's putting something in the lake that's poisoning people. So she's doing research out there and they don't like her either. The good old boys.
She's a smart woman.
They go there and they're like, oh, we're going to tear you out of your cabin, tie you up with some rope, and we're going to let the hounds eat you. So the hounds come out and start eating her. It looks like they're eating roast beef with ketchup. Like they're pulling like ketchup roast beef out of like a husk. And then they're like, all right, she's still alive. Now we'll drag her by chains in back of our truck and
Holy
then kill her.
Shit.
So the tone's like all over the place.
That's pretty fucking insane. Yeah.
But the best part is like the last 10 minutes of the movie, because she's about to be burned at the stake by the good old boys. They got her all tied up, whatever.
Wait, and this is like modern time.
Yeah. It starts off as like the witch getting crucified and burned at the stake, and then it switches to modern times. Yeah.
And people are just
modern times 80s.
Modern times 80s, people are just like, let's burn a witch.
Well, yeah, because at one point she goes to she's having weird like visions and stuff too. And so she goes to visit Dr. Loomis. This is like the most, every time I try to describe a movie, it's like a clusterfuck of ideas. It's like it's not in any order. It's the extreme of consciousness. And people like are like, I don't even know what he's talking about.
But I'm following.
I'll keep listening to him. So at one point she's having like these weird visions. So she goes to
Dr. Loomis.
He's always in the same office.
Right.
And he's always just doing weird stuff, like fiddling around with like mealworms from his arms, which never becomes of anything. He's like, I'm cursed. The mealworms never stop. I'm cursed because my grandfather, I found these books in the wall from my grandfather, but I won't talk about him ever again. But because of the books, mealworms. And she, it's like, what the movie is. And so she's like, oh.
Wait, so as like a doctor, whatever type of doctor he is, not concerned about the mealworms in his infested wound.
So she's like, I don't feel right, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, oh, what's going on? Because he knows, like, everybody's been saying in town that she's a witch. And he's like, oh, she's a witch. And he wants to make it right with the witch because he's cursed. And he wants to relieve the mealworm curse. Yeah. So he's like, we have to get to the bottom of this. What's going on? She's like, I don't feel good. And he's like, oh, well, you just have a little bit of high blood pressure, but that's it. And then it cuts and he has his hypnotism light on that's flashing and he's hypnotizing her. And he's like, tell me what you see. And she's like, I'm not a witch. They're trying to burn me at the stake. And Donald Pleasance is like, when did you become a witch? He starts like screaming at her.
Oh my God.
And he tries to get to the bottom of it or whatever. And he's like, we will win this time. We will win this time. And then he wakes her up and he's like, okay, here's some like ibuprofen.
Wait, what the fuck kind of doctor is he? Is if one, he's telling her that she has high blood pressure and then he's fucking hypnotizing her.
Yeah. He's like, all right, you're cool. Just go home. Here's a script. You know, you're a witch and we will win. And she's like, okay, cool, we won. So, but then he's never in the rest of the movie. He's just gone.
Oh,
like,
my God.
And then so the best part, I tried to say this a couple times, but the best part is she's being burned at the stake, right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, she gets the power from above. Saturnus Espiritu Sanus. It like,
right.
And this clouds open up and it's like red lightning comes. And then she starts spinning on the stake, like spinning around in a circle. And then her eyes get all crazy and black. And then she starts shooting laser beams out of her eyes. And
Holy shit. She
fucking starts melting these balls. It's the best shit ever.
Starts
shooting laser beams. The one guy is just his face, a close up of the guy from Office Space's old creepy face, just melting and going like, for like 3 minutes. It's fucking dope as shit.
I would watch those 3 minutes.
Yeah. There's also a really cool devil mask in it. Devil mask / devil guy. Right. I don't know if they're trying to make it seem like it's a mask or maybe it is the devil taking the form of one of the people and it's fucking sick looking, bro. Yeah. So anyway, she gets down from the stake and everybody's dead and she's like, all right, I guess I'm done being a witch and a teacher. And then she gets on the bus and she leaves town.
So gotta go to somewhere south of here. So no more New England for me.
It's time to go home. Let's wrap this puppy up.
Oh my God. That sounds pretty great.
It was fun. And like I said, it's like an hour and 20 minutes. Vinegar Syndrome did a really great job. I saw this years ago, and it was on a grainy as shit tape, and so again, they fucking remastered it and made it look fucking delicious again. It's not a great movie, but it's fun, it's a slow burn, and it definitely is one of those movies where it's got a payoff at the end, so you're definitely watching for like that sweet, juicy 5 to 10 minutes,
yeah.
But it makes it worth it. And I think that's going to be a recurring theme in some of our movies tonight.
Maybe at least one other movie.
Yes!
God, I love a fucking movie where like... goddamn witches get revenge, you know? Just give me...
I
love two things.
Yeah.
Movies where the fucking Nazis are getting just obliterated. And two, witches getting their revenge.
Well, I like movies where witches are topless in dreams. Like that's like one of my favorite genre. Like
hot redheaded witches like are topless in dreams.
Yeah, when I go to like Blockbuster, I look, where is the topless witch bitch section in dreams? Oh, that's over there in the corner. It's like three tapes. I'm just running them over and over again.
Oh my God. I get it though. Yeah. I do.
That's when they got a nice, like, I love this. She reminds me, it's like a specific look, but something about the lead in that movie with her short hair, but her hair is red, but it reminds me of, what's that fucking movie you like? Tough Enough.
The Legend of Billie Jean. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I meant though.
You know I knew exactly what you meant.
That was my Pat Benatar. Yeah, song that doesn't exist.
I got it though. It made sense in my brain.
She reminds me of her. Yeah. I think that's why I crushed on her a little bit.
Does she have like a mullet the haircut though?
Yeah.
But it looks good.
Yeah, it looks good. It's kind of like layered and
yeah.
You know, I think like only few women can pull off like a sexy mullet. Few women can pull off like a bald head,
right?
You know, so yeah. When I see it, I'm like, oh, you're doing it. You're doing that thing that's very rare.
You're doing it, Peter.
And I'm like, Peter, I'm gonna throw some little slippery surprise downstairs. Rufio on my PPO. What's the next movie?
Next movie is Too Beautiful to Die from 1988. I'm gonna just start off with the synopsis. The models of an agency are invited. It's so vague, right? The models of an agency are invited to a party by the owner of the agency. Oh my God, it's so dumb.
What do you want to say? The agency of the agency's hired people for the agency. That's the synopsis.
Did an Italian write the synopsis?
No, it was probably like some like 12-year-old who collects Vinegar Syndrome Blu-rays.
During the party, one of the models gets raped by a powerful guest.
Why are you laughing at that?
No, because okay, the funny thing is, which we will talk about when we talk about this movie.
Dr. Pretorius, the old guy?
They actually mention the rape in the synopsis of this movie. The rape is not mentioned or acknowledged
ever again.
One time in the movie at all.
I wanted that old guy to be more like in the movie.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
With his
Christ.
Weird like Kentucky Fried Chicken wet body.
He's gross.
Like, turn on the resonator!
Something about him also reminded me of the one guy from The Sopranos.
The old guy with the turnip nose.
The puffy white hair, come back.
He's like, I'm bald, but he's like, I'm not bald. It's puffed up. Yeah. And you're like, no, it's bald.
Anyway, so the model gets raped by a powerful guest with help from the other models. Soon, the models start to get killed one by one.
Mm-hmm.
That is it.
Yeah. Sexy as fuck 80s music videos. Sexy as fuck 80s commercials stitched together to make a movie. It's like this movie's like it's like an 80s pantyhose commercial. Like so sexy. And like I'm like, damn. And I always wonder, like, I was always so fascinated by the pantyhose that came like in the egg.
Yeah.
I was for something about that.
I think they were called legs.
It was sexy to me. Yeah. Even as a youngster, I was like, something sexy about that half egg.
There's just like, yeah, but when you like, I don't know.
But what is the purpose of pantyhose?
So people don't see your bare legs? I have no idea.
Like, pantyhose goes up past the undies, right? It's like underwear.
Are you like very high waisted, actually? Uncomfortably high waisted, like basically touching your breast.
So it's more like no legs, no couchon, and it sucks some of the fat in. Like
I think some of it is to hold your gut in.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it is like, well, it depends on like what color you want your legs to be, you know?
Right.
But I feel like a lot of it is just, you know, men don't want women to show skin.
Not me.
That's what I think.
I say show it all.
That's what I think.
Show it off. Yeah, wear the shortest of shorts. Don't wear underwear or but still. I like that half egg. It's sexy. Something about it. It's like a honey-baked ham ass. Pineapple glaze right up the ass crack.
Yeah.
Got fucking aircraft carrier ass. This movie has the longest asses maybe of any movie. It's long asses all the time.
It's because everything is super high cut, which you
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true. When I found this movie, I felt like Indiana Jones discovering the Ark of the Covenant, the Crystal Skull, and the time traveling thing from the most recent movie.
Right.
Where they're throwing, where they go back in time, and then they're playing with the Nazis, and they're getting thrown spears at the plane.
We haven't even seen the new movie
That's what
yet.
They said
that. I know, I heard that.
They said that. I heard word on the street is they throw spears at the plane.
Yeah.
At the Nazis. Lovely Beers told me to check this movie out a couple weeks ago. He hit me up, and he's like, "Did you ever see Too Beautiful to Die?" And I was like, "I have not." So boop, 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 look it up. Happenstance that Vinegar Syndrome had just put out a double release Blu-ray of this movie and Nothing Underneath, which we're talking about next.
Well, yeah, we're going to talk about
that. On the same Blu-ray.
So this movie, it is enjoyable. But like you said, it is like a music video. It's like, I mean, it starts off with like, okay, these models who are modeling,
but
then models are also dancers, which is not...
And models are also prostitutes.
And rapists.
And rapists.
Accessories to rape.
And there's an Italian guy playing a game on his computer called Porno Game. Yeah. And it's like, the game is four dudes. One dude is butt-fucking a dude who is getting his dick sucked by a lady that's also getting doggy-styled by another dude. And that dude is getting butt-fucked also.
Yeah.
And he's controlling the speed at which all the humping happens.
But I mean, imagine...
And he's very pleased.
But imagine what the quality of these graphics is. Not great.
I loved it. And I was pleased. But I still always think, like, why are we so prudish where we can't have video games like this for real with good graphics?
Oh, yeah.
You know? Tomb Raider style.
Oh my god! So can I just talk about the movie synopsis?
That guy looks like but that guy looks like Julian Sands.
He does look like a Julian Sands.
He looks like Julian Sands, Seth, mixed with Steve Buscemi. If Steve Buscemi lived in the Elf Town in Lord of the Rings,
yes. The way his ears are like, I swear he had like a surgery as a child to pin his ears back to his head.
Oh yeah,
right? Because it's not normal.
They clipped them like a Doberman.
It's not normal. But also, I want, like I said to Jesse, we were watching this.
They Dobermanned his ass.
I want to know what his actual voice.
I want to know
what his actual voice sounds like, because the dubbed voice they gave him
is
fucking terrible.
But it fits. I kind of love it.
So Weasley.
Also, R.I.P. Julian Sands. They found that voice bones.
Did they identify him for sure?
Yeah, it says.
Really?
Bones,
That's sad.
Yeah.
That's a bummer. So this movie starts off with these like models who are, for some reason, they're all naked in a hot tub together.
Smoking cigarettes, dumping champagne in each other's boobies.
Yeah. When like suddenly this old guy comes in and all of the women hold this one girl rapes her.
In slow motion.
Yeah.
It's like slow motion. Humping in the water with
just this old guy thrusting
undulating flesh and like the motion of the waves in the hot tub, and like the laughing is in slow motion, so it's like and she's like no, but all the women that are holding her down aren't like, oh, this is terrible.
They love it
This old guy's just going to town.
Yeah.
And also, if you're gonna rape someone, it's
not in a hot tub.
It's so wasteful. It's such a waste of a rape. Like, if you're going to go to jail for raping someone, like, have it be like a nice bed rape or something.
I mean,
you know?
It's just like,
not like a fucking water plunger toilet session.
It's not pleasurable.
It's horrible.
Sex in water.
Anybody who says that they love fucking a hot tub.
No,
that's a lie.
It is a lie.
It's a fucking bullshit claim. I've tried many times. I'm like, so Steph, let's try it again. Let's try it again to be the best. And it's just like,
it's terrible.
You just feel like you're having sex with like a hot mug of water. This fucking,
not good.
Not good at all. And so she gets raped at her. She leaves and she fucking runs over a dude on his bike.
Yeah. Messenger guy steals the Italian guy's car. And then later we find out that she's dead.
She's dead.
Her car crashed, but then also
the cop comes and the cop's like, yeah, her car fell off a cliff. That's basically what happened. Autopsy says she was shot in the head first.
With a 22.
And I was like, why do you need an autopsy to find out she was shot in the head?
Right.
Like, you just see it. It's like, oh, that's a bullet.
I mean, unless she was mangled from being dead in the ditch.
I do love when they cut to these fucking music videos, because they spare no expense with the Mad Max waterfall pyramid set. That shit's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And
the Iron Maiden.
The song they're playing is Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Warriors of the Wasteland, that song is the best, but I'm also like, where the fuck did the budgie come to get Frankie Goes to Hollywood and Louis Hewis and Hewis and Deneuze?
Huey Lewis and Deneuze.
Hewis and Deneuze. How did you get that? Because Huey was hungry in the 80s, so he wasn't just letting his tracks out to any old person.
Listen, they had some dirt on somebody.
Maybe he had some family in Sicily.
Something.
And he had to pay for it with blood or pay for it with one of his tracks. Yeah. And he's like, you could take one of these lesser known Huey Lewis. And Dinesh. That knife in it, though. Oh. That fucking prop knife looks like Malignant, John.
The music video, like, the costumes are cool. It's just like there's nothing that happens. Every time they show that music video, it's the same fucking thing.
So that's like the Achilles heel of the movie. The movie's like super stylized, but the kills suck.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird because there seems to be like so much emphasis put on like the look of the movie, the style of the movie. The shots are very like Argento-y, like he's trying to be Argento so bad. Yeah, yeah. Like he's trying to cash in on the giallo thing, and he's like 90% there, and then he just flubs the killing.
Yeah.
And like, if you were to like, this movie kind of reminds me of like, it's trying to be like opera almost, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Except opera is like an opera. This is like a music video, but it's kind of like a similar setting where like they're doing like almost like stage fright, right, too, right? So, but it doesn't even match those movies because the kills are just always so weak.
Right. And not only that, but it's like the one kill that you really truly want to see, they don't even show it. The old guy.
Yeah.
He's just dead.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
A great point. Yeah. The cop in this looks like Eggplant Parm Anthony Perkins, too.
He does.
I just kept saying that guy looks like Anthony Perkins, like. But something tells me he might have been French. Because then you said there's like a lot of French and Italian people.
There were some French names. Yeah. French and his name, Francois Martouret.
Oh, okay. Francois.
there's Florence Guerin. I don't know. There's like some Frenchies. Italians.
We can talk about the non-rape sex scene in this, because that shit is, there's some sensual exploration going on.
But there is, but then there's also like nothing. Like, it builds up and you're like, I want to see some sweat.
He's going down to that butt department like a submersible trying to take out the Titanic stuff, and he's ready to implode.
All he's doing is grabbing her cheeks, though.
No, he's sucking on her nipples like he's the baby, like he's the pacifier inspector in a baby warehouse.
It's a letdown,
Seth,
is what I'm saying.
I love it in movies when dudes go for a full mouthful of nipple,
because
you know that's never in the script. It's just like, caress her nipple. But in the heat of the scene, it's like he's holding it like he's holding, like a baby holds a breast, and he goes up to it like a baby, a hungry baby. like a true pacifier inspector would do in a baby warehouse.
Oh my God.
You're going to love the way I look.
I guarantee. Yeah, I don't know. That sex scene goes on forever also.
Yeah.
So long.
Yeah, but also like going back to like the rapist old dude, they said that his like, they made it seem like his dick was cut off also, which I was like, what the fuck? His dick was cut off and we didn't get to see that either?
They did say, like, keep the gory details out of the
news. And his crotchine was all bloody. And I'm like, well, what's up with that? They wasted so much money on everything else. I guess they couldn't afford to do any real cool kills. Because I would love to get, like, some kind of... You keep thinking that fucking awesome Malignant knife, like... Quadra dagger is gonna get like impaled in someone's face. Awesome.
Would be great.
Or an eyeball or something like that. And they just keep
right in the gut.
Nope. And it's in the gut.
Yeah. In the gut or in the back.
There's one scene where the guy is running away from the killer and he has his face up against the glass and you're like, this is it. It's gonna be knife through the glass, through the fucking He falls and he gets it in the back or something. Yeah. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Missed opportunities.
My dude.
And then they do it like a whole like, okay, this you think this person's the killer. But no, then it's a convoluted fucking reason.
Did you think the neighbor was the killer?
I thought the sister was the killer.
When the neighbor came in and saw the woman bathing?
That was weird.
And then the woman who went into the woman's house and went into her bathroom while the woman was taking a bath, she screamed when the woman came from under the suds.
Yes.
Is this woman demented?
And she said, you almost scared me to death. Why are you in my fucking house?
I was like, first of all, I'm naked in a bubble bath. You're in my house and you're trying to tell me that I scared you, you crazy fucking demented bitch. Get the fuck out of my house.
Oh my God.
Hit the road, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, basically what it comes down to is like, a man can handle a strong woman. That's what this comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, so I love how the last scene is set up in the director's loft, because his loft is fucking awesome.
It's so cool. I love how his kitchen is this little like standalone, like enclosed room in the middle of it. It's really neat.
It's like a room that doesn't exist, but like we're led to believe that people like live like this in this weird loft building that's amazing.
I want to live in a fucking loft like that.
It's a very 80s thing. It's not only that it's a loft, it's how it's decorated.
Right. Well, he has like, I think, is it like a car in there?
There's
and
a
he has
car
like-
in there. There's like a car piano. He like, yeah. he gets a shower like in like this weird, like state of the art, like dishwashing thing. It just makes no fucking sense. He's got like a 18 wheeler. That's like
it.
His bed.
Yeah.
You're just like, well, what is this? But it's like every 80s movie. I'm like, I was always like, man, I want to have me a loft when I'm an artsy fartsy boy, man. And I get to be so strong. But the director is like, that's why I think he's killing all these women, because he's got to pay for his rent for yeah. his mega loft. It's so expensive.
Probably.
He's got to kill all these women. He's got to harvest their organs for big veal in Italy.
Yeah. Harvest, it's just like, make the veal. And we've like kind of mentioned already that they don't mention, they don't like acknowledge.
We've mentioned this, that they don't mention.
They don't
that
acknowledge.
The agencies only hire people for the agency as long as you contact the agency first right. to make an appointment with the agency.
They don't acknowledge that this rape happened. And like when the one guy, the Italian like agent or whatever, he's like, they are going to come and mm-hmm. arrest us Good. For tax evasion and prostitution. And you're like, what
delivery.
Happened? Not prostitution. That right. was straight up rape.
It was rape. Yeah. She went in there and she said, here's $5, plow my punani. You know? And she's like, no, she just went in there to do drugs and have a super sexy, naked model, hot tub, squeeze time,
yeah.
drink, champagne, cocaine. That was all cool. And then this old dude rolled up like a slippery salamander into the hot tub and worked his way into a crevasse God. That he was not welcome inside.
And the faces he makes. Ugh.
Too many close-ups of that boy. Gross. And now I can't stop thinking about the Sopranos old guy. Thanks. Oh my God. It is like gross when they keep showing you like his like old man body.
Uh-huh, and
like
he's thrusting.
And like his like, what do they call him? Age spots, like on his nipple.
His liver,
like,
his liver spots.
There's like a mole on his back that looks like it's straight up cancer that he has just like ignored for years.
Oh my God.
So yeah, this movie's kind of like Chef Boyardee version of.
I don't want to ruin the ending Argento's because opera. I want everyone to be surprised.
You can ruin whatever you want.
Who the murderer is. No, it's worth watching.
It's the director. Spoiler alert, it's the director.
Yeah, but why is he killing people? She was changed after she was raped, and I had to murder her.
It makes no sense.
It's so dumb.
You're like, okay, the story was kind of making sense with the sister that was right. coming, and now you just made no sense.
Yeah, no
sense.
She
was changed. I was going to make her go to the top with me.
I created her. It made her image. I did this.
I'm Frankenstein. Mary Shelley wrote a book about me, and I'm not really the monster. The monster is my lust to kill. So yeah, so if you want the SpaghettiO version of Stage Fright, you got it. But I will say, I enjoyed it for what it was.
You enjoyed it for the sexy ladies.
I did, and I enjoyed the aesthetic of it 1,000,000%. Lovely Beers was absolutely correct that I would enjoy it, because I did. It's stupid. It'll be a movie I'll revisit again
yeah.
in a few years from now, but it's not like a classic by any stretch of imagination, but I do love that it exists. It's just a shame, because he was so close.
Yeah.
So close to making a classic. But I mean, sometimes, like, sometimes you want
like a stabbed eyeball.
You're
something.
Like, oh, I want the real Italian meatballs. You know,
yeah,
give
yeah.
me the three meats: the pork, the beef, the veal babies. And then sometimes you're just like, SpaghettiO has meatballs in it, and you know what?
Those, unknown spongy meat.
Those fucking meatballs are made. Those meatballs are made by forcing chicken bones through a high pressured sieve.
Uh-huh.
Sieve.
Uh huh.
To collect any edible tissue in the form of a paste.
So it's not even beef meatballs.
That's how they fucking make those things, Steph.
It's disgusting.
I loved
them when I was a kid.
Me and my coworker were talking about, I was like, I want to see what these meatballs are made of. And yes, that was the description.
They were so weird and spongy.
Meatballs are made by forcing chicken bones through a high-pressured sieve.
Yeah, because you get all the collagen and whatever fucking else, marrow. I don't know.
They're good. I will say they are good. But they're not like, you know, Italian hands did not form those.
No.
You know, you don't feel the love. You don't taste the skin part, like cells of like your grandmother's old hands.
And those poor little veal babies.
Yeah. Because like when an old woman makes a meatball by her hands, like part of her essence goes into those meatballs.
Yeah.
You know, perspiration.
Mothballs,
her perfume, her body odor. So she's seizing them
yeah.
from within.
That makes sense.
Externally and internally for you to enjoy externally and then internally. Uh-huh. You
know, yeah.
The circle of life.
I get it.
And it moves us all. What's the next movie?
Nothing Underneath.
Also on the same Blu-ray from Vinegar Syndrome. And you can watch both these movies, by the way, on Amazon Prime as well.
1985.
And Tubi.
Yeah, and Tubi.
To be sure.
Boy, this one.
To Ooh, be sure.
This one is like the most ridiculous one that we're going to talk about today.
This one is?
Yes, it fucking is.
Okay.
Okay, okay, there's one that makes less sense, but this one is so fucking ridiculous.
I love it. Okay. I love your energy right now. It looks like it's amber.
Amber is the color of my energy. Thank you. So the synopsis, a park ranger from Wyoming. He works in Yellowstone, guys. He works in Yellowstone.
How do you know? Because Yellowstone vistas galore. It's like David Attenborough would be jerking off. Like, yes. If you pan the camera a little bit off the set, you would see David Attenborough jerking off to all the Yellowstone vistas.
Oh my God.
Just creaming in canyons.
Whose twin sister is a fashion model in Milan, Italy, strongly senses that his sister is in mortal danger. Once he arrives in Milan, he discovers that his sister has disappeared.
He doesn't love his sister. He's horny for his sister.
Everyone's horny for his sister.
Everyone's horny for their sister?
For his sister.
Is this a fact? Everybody wants to fuck their sister in real life?
His sister, I said.
Everybody's horny for the sister. Let me tell you something.
Oh my God. It's well, then also we should say that the last movie was also took place in Milan. We're in Milano, guys.
Oh, Milan.
Milano cookies.
That's what I was thinking about. I was like,
Pepperidge Farm.
Is there any actual like authenticity to that?
I mean, probably not.
No.
I don't know.
Is there a time people just fucking pissed that Pepperidge Farm's like trying to appropriate their
shit?
I think
so.
Yeah. It is. They should just call them Italian people cookies. Yum yum Italians.
Those are so good though with that chocolate.
Oh
in the
my
middle.
God. Mm. I do. But chessmen for all times.
Yeah.
Pepperidge Farm chessmen because they're so buttery.
When I was a biscuity. Kid.
I want to have Pepperidge Farm chessmen in the bathtub and I want to use them as like a little, as a little like soap bar on my body. All that butter.
Ew. Yeah. With a chocolate melt in? They're the ones with the chocolate.
No,
on the
chessmen
back?
Don't have chocolate. No, chessmen are just
cookies.
Well,
they do make a cookie that has like a chocolate coating on the back.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I thought that Pepperidge Farm was for rich people.
I think I also thought that though.
Right? Because they were like in small packages and like they were like.
It's also marketing though, right?
Yeah.
The marketing kind of was like, this is like an adult cookie.
Yeah.
So I think like
it wasn't like E.L. Fudge.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when you were a kid, you looked at like those were like you did think they were more expensive, like they were for rich people because like more like they're like adults. And my mom wasn't going to buy cookies for herself because she could barely afford to feed us. So I did look at it that way too. But it's almost like how the marketing made you think that Grey Poupon was for rich people. It's fucking mustard.
It's mustard.
No rich people give a fuck about like a certain type of mustard. It's marketing. Yeah. It makes you feel like you're fancy. I'm going to go.
There's also Dijon mustard. That's why, you know, like I was like, give me that.
Dijon mustard also existed at that time. So I know, it was marketing. They put it in a glass bottle. So it felt more sophisticated.
Yeah.
It's all marketing. Everything's marketing.
Give me my French's. Not my French's. My Golden's brown spicy mustard.
Listen, I love all fucking mustards. Give me the browns.
No, I don't like the yellow
one.
Give
me the yellow.
French's.
Give me the red. Give me the Caucasian mustard. Give me it all. I want to taste all the flavors of the rainbow when it comes to mustard. Mustard!
Oh, my God.
But anyway, this guy does want to fuck his sister, and with good reason, because his sister is a dish with that white Phil Donahue hair. No bangs to be seen, because she cut them all the way back. That was a mistake.
It was like a weird thing though to do like that really blunt edge like
this is what she looks like
haircut.
You know, remember the Osbournes? She's like a sexy Jack Osbourne, like the pudgy son.
Really?
She looks like a sexy Jack Osbourne. She just has like a Jack Osbourne face.
Well, some of the hairstyles that she like when they style her hair up, it's not good. When she goes to the club in that blue dress with the hair down, that's good.
Oh, see, I disagree. I like the hair up, and I don't like it down. Because when she puts it down, she's got no bangs.
I know, I like it, though.
It looks like a dumb version of fucking, like a Three Stooges character.
I like it, because it's got this hard edge going on.
I do I see what you're saying. Yeah. I like the hard, when you said hard edge, I liked it. I liked it better. So, yeah, no, I changed my mind.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah.
But when he does start, when he picks up his sister's G-string at one point and starts, like, looking at it, I'm like, why did you touch that? That was like, in your sister's ass.
Right in her ass.
Right in her labia fold.
Yeah.
Like, folded up in there.
Yeah.
For all time's sake. And you're just, like, rubbing your thumb and index finger on it like you're trying to get sediment off of it. It's fucking disgusting. Like, some kind of crotch sand. like maybe she went to the beach and maybe some like a maybe some particulates.
Maybe there's a pearl that's being created in her vagina.
I want to see if there's any particulates in this particular situation.
No, but the thing is, like, so this movie starts off with him having these sensations of like this connection, like this telepathic connection.
Oh my God, please talk about that because it's the best.
It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
Because it suddenly happens and I'm like, well, first of all, they're fraternal twins.
Right.
And like, do fraternal twins have a connection like that? I mean, you would think like identical.
That's your problem?
Identical twins.
No twins have a connection like that.
No, but no one has telepathy, but identical twins have a stronger connection. That's just two babies just growing inside together. It's different.
Don't come here with your quack science.
Anyway, he suddenly just starts developing this shit, but then he's like, oh, we had this before. But meanwhile, like, what? Does it just come and go?
Exactly.
Like, you would be dead. You're on a mountain, you're climbing a mountain, and then you just like, you would fucking just fall off and die.
What I was thinking was, what if she's like brings a dude home,
yeah,
dude pulls down his pants, he's working with like 10 inches,
right,
and she's just getting her G-spot dunked on like all night.
Are you feeling
is
that?
He home like having like epileptic seizures because like he feels something hitting something, yeah, inside of him, you know?
It's just strange.
Meanwhile, he's at home thinking he's like pissing kidney stones, but it's because his fucking sister is like getting some 10 inch Italian pipe.
Yeah, so anyway, he gets this, like, this is funny too. So he gets this magazine delivered that she's, it's her first cover. And it's like, I moved hotels, here's my phone number, you know, whatever, which is important later, very soon later. And then he has this telepathic episode where like he is convinced that his sister has been murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Not like this synopsis, like in mortal danger. No, he's like,
she did.
He's like, my sister was murdered.
Which, like, if that's the case, why even bother go over it?
Right.
Just be like, okay, yeah, it's a done deal. But he's like, he's kind of a terrible actor. Like,
he's not attractive.
He stumbles through scenes like he's vaguely aware that he possesses consciousness. Like, he's like, oh, I'm alive. That's right. Yeah, and he's not good looking. He looks like fucking, like, if Jack Palance and Christopher Walken had a kid, yeah, it was like had a test tube baby together. He's just like got just. His face just looks very unstiffened.
And his hair is awful.
Yeah, his hair. He's got like the 80s Christopher Walken hair.
Yeah, where it was like puffy, like
puffy spike.
Comb backs.
Like puffy spike. And you're like, how does that happen? Because the hair looks real dry.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't look like there's any product in it.
No.
So it's got like
fried.
It's like a dry stiffness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how they did that in the 80s. Someone hit me up if they know how to do that, because we're going to do Steph's hair like that.
Oh my God. But then, okay, so we're going to give you a little surprise when we tell you who's in this movie. So he goes to Milan. And,
oh my God, what an absolute fucking delight this
and
is.
He goes to the hotel where she's staying, and you meet, well, I just have to talk about this guy really quick. He's not very important, but he is the comic relief in this movie a little bit. The like concierge or the desk clerk, I don't know who he is, of this hotel, who is a panty sniffer, hardcore panty sniffer.
Oh, I just want to say, in that rape scene, you do get a full fucking crotch shot, full muff shot. I had to rewind it because I thought I was looking at like a fucking nest of daddy longleggers.
What, in the other movie?
No, in this movie.
What rape scene?
I'm sorry.
This movie?
In this movie, when she's
no, that's when the girl's having sex with the cokehead.
All right, that's what I meant. That's not a rape scene.
Right, oh, right. You get a full bush.
No. It is the orgy scene where they're trying to have an orgy. Remember with the Russian roulette thing?
But you also get it when he's just trying to bang that girl and then she's like not into it.
Yes,
and she's like,
yes.
And he's like, I need to go get more coke.
But the Russian roulette scene is what I'm talking about.
You also see his whole fucking dick and balls from behind.
Do you really?
Yes, you do.
Oh shit.
When he gets up out of the bed to put his clothes on, you can just see it.
I'm watching this again.
See the silhouette.
Oh, silhouette.
It's just a silhouette.
Silhouette's not seeing it though.
I know.
It's like they show you a full up like daddy long legger nest.
I know. Yeah, they
like,
do.
It's close.
Yeah.
And it's like, don't show it that close.
It's just too close.
Like, yeah. Like it's not like you show like a scrotum and you show like one ball like that close. No one wants to see one ball that close with like veinage looking, looking like topography.
See all the little hair sticking out.
It looks like a fucking raised map that you would have in like middle school. So people could read it that were blind.
No, and the way that scene is shot is like, it's a surprise because it's like a real close, a real fast cut to it.
Right.
It's like a...
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about now. Thank
you. Yes.
You made me feel like I was thinking about the other movie, but I wasn't.
Because you said rape scene. There's no rape scene in this movie. There's an attempted rape in this movie.
Attempted rape. There is. But that's not the one I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Russian roulette scene where she's like, oh, we're going to have sex. And she's like, no. Oh, you don't want to have sex? Then we're going to play Russian roulette. Oh,
which is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many things that are insane about this movie.
All right, go back to who we're going to talk about.
Okay,
in this movie.
So anyway, then he's
I derailed you.
He's like, I can't find my sister, and he's like, I need to go to the police station. Who is the fucking police inspector?
The Graviman. The Graviman Khan.
Oh my God.
Donald Pleasance
doing the worst Italian accent ever.
I fucking love him so much because
he doesn't want to do this movie.
He doesn't want to do any movie he's in. Like very few movies. Like if you want to watch a Donald Pleasance movie where Donald Pleasance is giving it his all.
That Australian movie.
Wake and Fright.
Yes.
It will fucking blow your mind and you will be like, okay, he's a fucking actually awesome actor. But at one point in his career in the 80s, because Wake and Fright, I believe, is like 70s. In like the mid to late 80s, Donald Pleasance decided, I'm just getting drunk all the time. Oh, man. And that's all I really give a fuck about. And like sometimes he chews up scenes.
Yeah.
And sometimes he's like quirky. But sometimes you just get the impression he's like, I'm just saying my shit. I don't care how weird it sounds. And it makes the fucking movie that much enjoyable.
I'm pretty certain that he completely ad-libs some of these lines.
Oh, I feel like he always does. I feel like he because always
when
ad-libs.
Because when they go to Wendy for lunch.
So they go to Wendy's in this, and it's just called Wendy. But he goes over to the, I was like, because I watched it before, so and then Steph was watching. I was watching it with her, and I was like, wait, do you see what he gets at this fucking salad bar? And he goes into the salad bar, and he just starts piling on all this like fucking pasta. And he's like, I'm going to need 10 napkins at least.
And then, but he's eating pasta spaghetti with nothing on it. Yeah. There's no sauce on it. And he has a napkin tucked into his shirt like a bib.
Yeah. And he's just like, and he's slurping like flavorless noodles. Like really.
Probably so sticky.
Really close to the plate.
You know how pasta gets sticky?
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of like how a baby eats. Like when you just put you just put like the food on like their little baby thing and they're really close eating it, like and putting it in his, that's what he was doing with his plastic fork.
Oh my God.
And he had a little bib on, so he looked like a baby. And he also sounded like an Italian baby that just learned to speak because his Italian accent, Steph kept saying, it sounds French, but then it sounds Russian. He's like,
it's all over.
He's all over. And I was like, but he's British. So, like, it shouldn't be, like, that hard of a deviation to do.
And he wasn't trying.
He wasn't.
But then also, there's one point, so he's eating his spaghetti, and he says something like, I never eat sauce the color of blood.
No.
And you're like, you're fucking Italian, dude. Yeah. That's all you do.
Yeah, okay. He's like, what does he say to him when he says, wrong, this is planet Earth?
Yes. Because he's like, something about like whatever's happening. And he's like, I can't imagine this happening on Earth or something. He's like, wrong. You are on Earth with, oh my God, I can't like this, like not this iteration, but like this something like, oh, I can't remember. It's fucking ridiculous.
He's trying to compare the modeling stuff to like what he does, taking pictures of like people in lineups at in jail.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's like, it's the same thing as me taking pictures of criminals in lineups wearing different clothing. And you're like, but no, it's totally different.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. God, I wish I could remember that fucking line, though. It was so good. Yeah, Donald Pleasance, man. He's not in this movie a whole lot, but when he is,
he's in it, and he's in it. So it's not like the Devonsville Terror.
No, he's in it more.
Where he's in it like literally for 10 minutes in the same room.
Right.
It's like this one, he's in it more. He's in different scenes. You see him in different scenes. Like he is connective tissue. He keeps calling like the main guy in it Wyoming because he's from Wyoming. I do like their interaction together, how they're like buddies. Because he's
they are until they're not.
Because he's basically like, you know, like, oh, twins have this connection with each other. And Don Pleasance is like, oh, do they? I never heard of this. And then the next time they meet, he's like, oh, yeah,
I was reading up on the
you know, telepathic connection between twins. Very interesting. I'm like, oh, they're like buddies now. Like, this could be like a really cool buddy comedy that's happening.
Okay, there's the Coke guy. The Coke guy who tries to rape the sister in the beginning of the movie, and then you find out that she knows him, and they had that weird sex Coke party, Russian shots, roulette.
Galore.
Yeah. And then everyone starts...
That Russian roulette scene's weird, because then you find out that one of the girls, like, he's like, they don't have an orgy, so he's like, let's do Russian roulette instead. Nothing gets the juices flowing like Russian roulette, and no one wants to do it, and he's like, I'll give you $5,000 for each time you pull a trigger. And the one black girl's like, make it 10. And he's like, done. So then the girl does it, doesn't go off.
Yep.
And then the No Banks is going to do it. But then this other girl's like, no, I want to go next. And she like blows her brains out.
Yeah.
Does anything ever become of that?
Well, that's the whole thing is like, they basically have to like work together to get rid of the body. So that's the connection between them.
Yeah.
And then the sister, and then he pays them off in diamonds. Mm. The Coke daddy is like, I'm going to pay you off to keep you quiet with diamonds.
Right.
And then one by one, all of the people start getting murdered. And in the end, it ends up being
the neighbor,
the sister who's alive. Oh, the neighbor. You think they make you think it's the sister who's alive.
Right.
Because the friend. Oh, my God. It's not even the neighbor. It's the girl. Another girl staying in the hotel. This is so fucking convoluted. He like gets the hots for this chick.
That's what I meant. Neighbor in the hotel.
She's hot. They're like kind of dating a little bit. And then it turns out that she was like banging the sister. Yeah. They had a sexual relationship.
Eating her pussy and everything. They showed at.
Yeah.
And I want to eat it tonight. I want to eat it.
She fucking killed the sister and pulled like a fucking psycho and had the sister's corpse in a fucking hotel and was like, I mean, an apartment and was decorating.
Had her like nailed to the fucking chair through her hands.
Why? Because she was dead.
I think like she kept her there alive until she just died. Yeah. She was all blue and stuff. And I was like, that shit would have stank.
Yeah.
And how he gets in that room is so crazy. He climbs up this like rope in like is like a coaxial cable for like internet high speed internet.
Yeah, but did you see all the, like the spikes that are on all the windows? And that's to keep the pigeons off. Right,
and he gets like impaled by it in his flesh.
Because pigeons are a problem in Italy, in case you didn't know.
Well, apparently, like apparently those birds love those things. Like they were designed to keep the birds up, but now birds are specifically making nests in them.
Because they're smart.
They were talking about it, like how much money was spent on those in buildings in Philadelphia and under bridges in Philadelphia. And it turns out birds fucking love them.
Yeah.
And birds are trying to pull them off to make nests with
dummies.
Because it's like provides like protection against predators because they can, littler birds can fly in there, but then big birds can't go in. So it's like protection. So now birds are seeking that.
That's crazy.
Good job.
Evolution right before our eyes.
Right, you fucking dinosaurs. Nature finds a way. Life, birds find a way.
Oh my God.
Birds are dinosaurs. Life finds a way.
The end of this movie, though, so.
At the end of the movie.
There's a Thelma and Louise.
It's like a it's like a showdown in the atrium, and it's the Tyrannosaurus Rex, and you think that they're going to get killed, but then the Velociraptors are the hero.
Right.
And they jump on the back. And they save them. And then the banner falls down and it says, in the time of Velociraptors.
Clever girl.
And it says, run free. And then Chris Pratt comes and whistles. And then everybody rides the Velociraptors to the credits.
Yep.
And that's the end. Yeah. Fucking awesome ending.
Oh my God.
I love how you said the ending was fucking like Thelma and Louise.
Thelma and Louise. I want to leave it at that though. I want to leave it vague at that. So people watch it.
People
watch
these movies. They want to know. People listen to this. They don't have to watch these pieces of shit.
Right.
So I like this movie. Just to be honest.
So the brother ends up finding this fucking apartment where his sister's corpse is because of his connection.
Hold on. She wasn't in a fucking chair. She was in a she was nailed to a wheelchair, right?
She was in some kind of a chair.
Chair at wheels?
I don't remember the wheels.
Because she pushes her to the window.
Yeah, it must have been a wheelchair.
Okay, wheelchair.
She does. Yeah. Or a chair on wheels.
A chair
on
wheels.
Like a desk chair. Like an office chair.
Or it was like a car that she deconstructed, so it was just the seat and the wheels, but still had an engine.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah.
Or it was like a fucking chair on like a lawnmower.
Yeah.
And she turned and pull chain lawnmower.
That makes sense.
And she pulled it.
And then it just took off.
Took off.
Yeah. So anyway, the brother finds the hotel, the apartment. I keep saying the apartment where his sister's corpse is because of his connection with her.
Oh, yeah,
the twin connection.
But she's dead.
So that throws that theory out the window. Anyway, he finds her, and then the crazy ex-lover bitch shows up.
But they don't even explain that well, because like he's like going to leave, and then he starts tripping balls on the train, and he's wandering around
connection.
And I was like, what is he doing?
It's a twin connection. Ugh. That's what this movie should be called.
Twin connection.
Twin connection. So, and then the cops,
I think he needs some work.
The cops, Donald Pleasance and the other cops, they follow him and they find him in the host in this apartment. And just when they're like, we're going to get you, crazy lady. She's like, you'll never take us alive. And then she grabs the sister's wheelchair and she pushes it out the window. And they from booking together.
They're from booking together.
Thelma and Louise.
Yeah. Except like, it wasn't like one of them was a corpse in Thelma and Louise, you know? So weird.
Oh my God, it's so crazy.
Nothing underneath. Then that title, by the way, is from like one of the photographers like says it.
Oh yeah, he's like, yeah, they basically want a model to be just a hot body and a pretty face and nothing underneath. Mm-hmm. Essentially, is what they said.
I was like, amen to that, bruh.
Yeah.
Amen to that.
The movie is fucking, it's fun, but it's, I like Too Beautiful to Die better.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, I like this one better.
Oh, really? I like Too Beautiful to Die better. I hate this guy. I think that's what it is. I fucking hate him.
I mean, I can see why you say that. I think this movie has more to offer in terms of like a story.
Yeah.
And Donald Pleasance just sells it for me.
Oh, he does. No, he's great.
Because he's
great.
Just like, God. And it's like, I always, it's funny because like, I keep finding these, he's in so many movies that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
Because he's in so many movies altogether. And like, I'll stumble upon something like this and I'll be like, God damn, where was this my whole life? Fuck, I've done a Pleasant in Spaghetti and Wendy.
That part was so crazy.
I just like, and I think like, it's like he always seems like in some of these scenes that he's really paying attention to what the other character is saying. Like his eyes, like he's always seriously looking at
his
them.
His eyes look weird in this movie.
But you can tell he's spaced out.
Yeah.
Like he's just like, he's looking at them, but he's just like, when is my line coming? He's waiting for their lips to stop so he can say his line. Yeah. But yeah, no, I agree with what you said earlier. Like he seems like he's ad-libbing everything. Like I feel like in most of the movies he's in, they're like, this is the idea for the scene. This is what we want you to convey. And here's the script. And he's like, I'm just going to convey what I want,
right?
Because
it's just like the whole line with all the napkins and stuff. Like I feel like he was like, I think this would be funny to say because I'm eating spaghetti, it's like spaghetti sauceless spaghetti.
And he was right. that's a sign of a genius. The fact that you connected those dots yourself, a fucking amen, brother. Goddamn, I wish fucking Pleasance was still alive because he had so much more to give to.
Oh my god,
the Gras man. I need at least 10 napkins, at least. He's so just weird. Looking around. I also think he's just like a weird looking guy because he's got his little mustache.
Yeah.
He's got his little face, pudgy little cheeks, bald head. His eyes are bloodshot in this
because
on a bender.
He looks nuts in this movie.
He doesn't look as like crazy as he ended up looking in like the Halloween series towards the end. Like, he doesn't have like that fat puff.
Yeah.
He's still got like that nice, like, you know.
He's a little leaner.
A little leaner. Yeah. Like probably not eating spaghetti like you would think he was in this movie. All right, Stephanie, our last film of the episode, if you would please.
The last movie is...
Save the best for last. Yeah.
The Appointment from 1982. And I have...
VHS copies.
The back of the VHS.
Tape page!
It's funny because like when you look on IMDb, like the cover of the movie there, I guess it's like the Rottweiler's face.
Yeah.
This one, though, is like...
Daddy.
A skeleton hand, a stopwatch, a book. It's a planner. It's a daily planner.
It's the daddy
stuff. And the roses.
Roses.
The roses are in there.
Uh-huh.
I don't know about the skeleton hand, though.
Yeah, yeah. The watch.
The skeleton hand.
Yeah, but he's dead.
There's no skeleton.
He's dead because of his watch. Right? He turned around.
It is. Because that fucking watch kept dying.
Yeah, and then
God damn it.
He died because the watch died. See how it's all connected?
Yeah. It came without warning.
That's what I do all the time.
A mystifying force so puzzling that no one knew who it was, what it was, or how to stop it. In fact, no one was even aware that it was controlling their thoughts and actions.
Nor was I.
Did it exist? Edward Woodward, star of the big TV hit The Equalizer and the film Breaker Morant.
Poor man's Michael Caine.
He is. And also, he looks like, in the one scene...
The old guy from Sopranos.
I can't even think of the actor's name. It doesn't matter. And Jane Merrow star in this haunting tale of a family caught in the evil clutches of this strange entity. A mysterious being that enters their minds and makes them do unspeakable acts that are beyond their control.
Yo, that is just
that
like...
That did not happen.
That synopsis is not...
Right? Is, none of this happened.
No. Fire that.
Nothing happens.
Nothing.
Highlighted by superb photographic sequences, The Appointment takes a terrifying look at the world of the supernatural, a world that once entered is almost impossible to leave. It's a frightening experience that will leave a lasting impression on your mind. Don't watch this when you are alone.
I will say it did leave a lasting impression on me, which is why I wanted to talk about it.
Because it ends on a high note. That's why.
It starts on a high note and it ends on a high note.
It does.
This is the thing about
the middle,
movie.
Boring.
This is the thing about movies. You want to have peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
All right. That's how you keep a person's interest. It's like called you ratchet up the tension, release it.
Right.
Ratchet up the tension, release it. And you go and so it on and so forth. That. This movie
starts,
releases the tension yeah. with like a cool part, then is slow and steady build to the last final fucking orgasm, but it is a fucking mission to get to it.
Yeah, thank God it's only an hour and a half long.
I will say, if you sit tight and you do it, you will be paid back in spades, as they say. And I never knew what that meant, but
yeah, what does it
with
mean?
With like shovels,
like so cards, you can dig. Like spades, cards.
I thought like you'll be paid back in spades, like shovels. We're paying you, and shovels are our currency.
Like shovels full of dirt on your grave.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, well, I guess that's because this director, this was his first feature film.
Well, he worked on like a ton of Hammer movies.
Yeah, he was like the assistant director or the third director.
He did like
he was like, I'm a big boy. I'll make my own movie.
So he worked on Scars of Dracula and Horrors of Frankenstein, which are like two awesome fucking movies. Yeah. But yeah, I guess let's try to make sense of this movie together.
Let's try. This movie is so fucking weird. I just feel like I was like, Jess, I'm an hour into this movie. I don't know what's happening.
So the movie is like very just strange because it opens up with like a narrator, but then you never hear the narrator again.
Right. So basically it's like three years ago, this young girl was walking home from school and she cuts through this field that the kids routinely cut through to get to their homes. And suddenly
this scene's
awesome.
This build up of the scene. Everything, you're just like, this is going to be the most amazing movie ever because it's fucking so cool.
It's so good, right? So she hears like, Sandra, Sandra. And then she's like looking around and then she fucking, this goes on for like 10 minutes. And then suddenly she's just like fucking sucked into the trees.
And it's like forceful. It looks like they had some kind of powerful rope.
That girl broke her neck.
Because it didn't look like a doll either.
No, it looked like
an actual person. And she gets sucked into like the branches and shrubs and everything like that. It's fucking cool. And then she's carrying something and it like, you see it, it's like metal and it's like compressing.
I think it might be like a book and an instrument. Is she like in the music school too?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was, you're right. It's a metal book.
Yeah. Metal book. it's a steel book.
it's a steel book. Hi, my name's John Ashmore. I brought my steel book to school to show all my friends. And now this malevolent creature pulled me into the shrubbery and he fucking squashified my steel book.
So yeah, the narrator's like filling you in. So this was 3 years ago. And then it's like, basically she disappeared. No one knows what happened, but everyone's pretty sure she'd be dead.
Yeah. It's like, we speculate that many things could possibly have happened, but one thing for certain, we don't know, and you won't know anything about that either. And also, what's up with this movie? That's something I should have said to me.
Yeah, because there's zero mention of her ever again.
Because, like, you know, as you do when you watch a movie, you're like, okay, I see what you're setting up here. What's the next step?
Right.
So, like, you're going to, like, okay, going to come into the household, right?
Right. Well, like 3 years. So 3 years pass, right? And that's like 3 years forward. Now it's present time.
And they do have this little thing where it's like, we don't know what happened in those trees, but we decided it was probably best to build a huge metal fence around the whole area so nobody could go there.
Right.
And you're just like, okay. That doesn't make sense, but okay.
So the kids can't walk there any longer.
Right. They should have said, like, we burned all the trees down.
So.
And built a 55 and over retirement community.
So fast forward 3 years, and now we're dealing with a girl. What the fuck's the girl's name? Joanna.
Joanna. Joanna.
Poor
woman's Jennifer Connelly.
She is a 14-year-old musical prodigy, apparently. And she's also a spoiled little brat. And possibly has a sexual relationship with her father.
Oh my God, right? What the fuck, dude? This movie is weird because, like, there is so much weirdness happening. The mom's jealous of the daughter. The dad's going to, like, the daughter's bedroom door at night and hesitantly, like, holding on to the knob.
And she's inside, like, open the door, daddy. Yeah, come on in.
Come on in, dad. Come on in. I hope daddy comes in tonight. I hope daddy comes in tonight. And he never does. And he has trouble sleeping. And he keeps walking by her door and looking at her door. And you're just like, but what is happening? What are you going to tell me anything about this? No, we're not going to tell you
anything
about it.
But here's the thing. This entire movie does take place in, like, a 24-hour period of time.
Right.
Right? Because it's like, the day that we're introduced to this family, we find out that
Which is kind of what I like about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but it's fucking weird because it does feel like it's more time than that. Doesn't it? in a way,
because this director has a tendency to like hold scenes way too long, and he drags things out way too long. And
well, the dad's in that restaurant in the morning drinking coffee and reading a newspaper for 25 minutes,
and he's hearing noises for like 25 minutes, and then the dogs come in through the middle of an enemy comes into the fucking house at night, and you're just having to watch dogs walk around a house for 25 minutes, and you're like, but what are these dogs doing? Oh, the roses are dying, the petals are falling off. What's up with that? Nah, we're not going to tell you what's up with that. Oh, the dogs went into the garage and cut the fucking brake lines.
So
what's up with that?
This is what happened. So this is like, let's say this is a Thursday, right? We find out dad's car.
Was it a Thursday?
I don't know. I'm just saying, for instance, hypothetically, this is a Thursday.
Hypothetical Thursday.
This is a Thursday, and the dad is like, my car is fucked. I got to put my car in the shop. I got to rent a car because I got to go to this fucking super important thing for work tomorrow that I wasn't supposed to go to, but my coworker who was supposed to go, his goddamn pregnant wife has to be in the hospital.
It was basically like, this mine collapsed and killed like 50 people. My company's responsible. And I have to drive there. It's 200 miles away.
Right. And then, but we also find out that he's going to miss his daughter's concert. And she's a goddamn spoiled little brat. And she's like, but daddy, am I not an important special to you anymore?
Daddy, ain't I soft and juicy anymore? Like you said, soft and juicy, daddy.
There is so
creepy.
So he has to tell her, right? And she gets so upset. And then there is this scene where he's sitting in his armchair and she's resting on his knee. Mm-hmm. And she stares at him. It's the scene is so uncomfortable, and it goes on for 20 minutes where he's like, honey, I just have to do this thing for work and I'm so sorry. And she just stares at him. He's like, honey, you just go to bed now. And she stares at him. Honey, I said, just fucking go to bed now. Mm. And she stares at him. 20 minutes.
I thought I was I used to be your special one. Ain't I still your special one? He's like, you're still my special one. But to be honest with you, sometimes you're a real pain in my fucking ass. Yeah.
Oh, but I forgot to mention that
And he starts looking at her and he's like, your head is the size of a tangerine.
So earlier in the day, she fucking goes to the gate and she's talking to somebody, but we don't know who she's talking to.
Right.
Right. We find out later who she's talking to at the gate.
It's the dogs.
It's the Rottweilers who are...
Three Rottweilers, demonic, to be specific.
Yeah, the demonic force, apparently.
Cerberus. Cerberus was the guardian of the gates of hell.
Yeah, it was a three-headed dog.
So that's why that's supposed to be significant.
I get it.
Significant.
So anyway, dad has a nightmare that night that he's gonna die in a fucking car crash. And then mom has a fucking same nightmare where dad's gonna die in a car crash. But dad still goes in his car and still drives to wherever he's going.
The movie feels like you're inside someone else's dream, honestly, because like it shows you scenes. And then it shows you snippets of scenes you've already seen within a scene, like as a flashback, like constantly. Yeah. So it's like, oh, remember that you were on a telephone? Remember that? Oh, flash of a telephone. Oh, remember the flowers? Yeah, you saw flowers. Remember when you were in the fucking telephone booth? Yeah, the telephone booth.
Oh, and then the one point the dad like takes a sleeping pill and he falls asleep and he has like, he has weird dreams. Like the one dream is the car crash dream, but the other dream is where his wife fucking turns into his daughter.
Yeah.
And it's weird and sexual.
That's when I was like, it's incestual.
Yeah.
You know? But the whole time I was watching this movie, I was like, is this about possession? Is this about incest? Is this about how seatbelts are frauds and they provide a false sense of security? Because at any moment when you step inside a vehicle, you could die.
Right.
I don't know. Is it about the dangers of feral dogs? Is it about how you should never trust your mechanic because you don't know what they're doing inside your car? What is the fucking, what are they trying to tell me? What is it about?
I don't know. Right. And then there's this whole thing where like the mechanic is working on his car and the mechanic's like, oh, what is this piece? There's a leak.
Oh, and I see this leak.
There's like a puddle in his garage with a piece. And you're like, oh, what happened to his car? But then his new car that he rented is also not working.
Yeah,
right.
I don't understand.
But there's a connection between them.
I think there's like a connection between cars that were built in the same assembly line. Like they're kind of like they're like twins.
They're like ghost cars.
So the cars can like have this telepathic connection with other cars that were built on the assembly line when they were built.
That makes sense. Like that's like what fraternal I was thinking. Twins.
Yeah, fraternal.
It ties into the last movie.
Mechanical twins. Yeah, so he's trying to start his car, and as he's trying to start his car, his rent car, the car in the shop that the mechanic's working on, ignition is turning over.
Yeah, and it fucking murders the mechanic.
And
then
he gets ground up into the engine, and the fucking wrench he's holding gets sucked through the top, and all his blood geysers. That fucking kill's awesome.
It's good. Because you don't even have to see what actually happens. You use your imagination.
Exactly. It's so...
And it's horrifying.
The sounds that it makes and him like gurgling in there, and you just see like the blood shooting out of the top is fucking so cool.
It's really good.
I was just like, man, you could have had something here with this movie. Like you were on the cusp of greatness with this movie.
Oh my God. And then, so the dad is on the road and he, stops in that cafe, like I said, for 25 fucking minutes but he's having all these like flashbacks of his nightmare. And then he's driving and the same exact shit that happened in his nightmare starts happening.
The movie's like the progenitor to A24, bro.
I'm telling you right now. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm screaming, dude, this has fucking happened in your nightmare.
Straight up grief horror. Grief horror 2000 on this fucking John.
Oh my God. And then a big fucking tractor trailer drives by with three goddamn Rottweilers on the side of
it. And it pulls over as he's on the fucking phone.
Right.
Pulls over and waits.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh. This part reminds me of Stephen King's The Duel. I fucking love Duel so much, dude. It's one of the most underrated fucking movies. It was one of Steven Spielberg's first movie.
Stephen King.
I meant Steven Spielberg. Yeah. Sorry. Steven Spielberg's first movie. Yeah. Directed by him, and I think I made you watch.
I watched it before.
It's just so fucking cool. It's like a movie that's great for like the tension and stuff like that. So this part does remind me of that with like the truck and everything. And he like leaves off the phone, and you see that he leaves his watch in there.
Right, his watch that has died already.
Yeah,
he's been fucking with it. So anyway, he's driving.
You've been getting flashes of this watch the whole movie. By the way,
oh my God,
he could be talking about baked beans and what they're gonna eat for dinner, and you would see a flash of a watch.
Right. And then so this A24. Whole, he's driving down the A24 road.
A24 shit is happening.
And he starts looking back in his car and he's looking at his briefcase and he's looking at these apples and he's looking at his suit. This is exactly what happened in his dream.
When you go on a road trip, you best have at least a dozen apples.
Yo, he's probably farting. Dude, apple
if
farts.
It was me,
so
I,
many.
I would just hook a tube up to my butt and I would engify the car with my butt fumes.
So anyway, then he's driving along and all this bad shit's happening that you're like, this happened in this dream. And he's like, oh, I fucking left my watch in that phone booth. I got to turn back and go get it.
Yeah.
So he turns his car around and he's driving back and you're like, well, maybe his dream's not going to happen. Right. Because in the dream, you don't see him turn around.
Right.
But
that's what causes the whole the best thing. This is what makes the best thing that's ever been filmed. Maybe ever. Maybe ever.
I mean, that's great.
There's two things I remember in my life when I think about movies. It was Jurassic Park when the dinosaur, his foot is making the water go choo-choo.
Yes.
It's that scene. And now number two is this scene that we're about to talk about.
I can't believe you just fucking compared this to Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah. I did.
So, yeah, he turns around.
This has to be in like the top 100 memorable moments of movie history.
This is the most epic single car crash, right? Because it's like...
And if we're being honest, it is the main reason you should watch this movie.
Yes, it's the only reason you should watch this movie.
And I want you to actually watch the movie. Don't go on fucking YouTube and ruin it for yourself.
No, watch the whole movie because you need to see all the weirdness that we just mentioned.
Because you have to work because when it happens, it's so much more of a payoff.
Yes. Suffer for the ending. You earned it.
Yeah, you fucking earned that shit.
So he turns the car around and he's driving on this fucking narrow, windy road when suddenly that fucking tractor trailer with the goddamn Rottweilers comes and it's like very narrow pass
of Rottweilers as well.
Yes, and then he sees these Rottweilers jumping on his car, which is what happened in his dream. And then he fucking loses control. He blows out a tire.
This is like a 10-minute.
He's losing brake fluid. I don't know what's leaking from his car.
The apples are flying everywhere. They're exploding.
Oh my God. This car crash literally does go on for 10 minutes.
He hits an embankment. Mud splashes on his window. His tires all pop. And so his car bottoms out and his engine's on fire. And he's smashing into the guardrail and he's smashing his head against the side glass and it splinters. He's fucking screaming. He has no steering fluid. So his wheel's spinning all over the place. It starts smoking. He comes around a corner, goes up another embankment. You think his car's gonna flip, and you're just like watching this and you're like, holy shit, this is like fucking badass. Right. It's never gonna end. Then he hits the guardrail and his car tilts forward and stands vertically for like 10 seconds.
It holds it.
And it's so creepy looking.
It is.
It's so creepy looking.
The gas is pouring out of his gas tank.
Yeah, all over the car. and his fucking, as his car goes up, his fucking suit, suitcase goes through the fucking
and
windshield.
And his suit goes out, the suitcase goes out, his fucking bag flies out.
And you watch that, and the car's vertical, and then it shows gasoline, like, streaming down towards the edge, whatever, and his car just goes, floop, off the edge.
And then it cuts away, because you're like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
And then he's in his car, which is in the tree.
He's like 100 feet off the ground, like and a car is on its top.
It's very disorienting because you don't know what position he's in
at first. Yeah,
for like the longest time.
Well, that's why I said to Steph too. I was like, Steph's like, you know, why is he trying to undo his seatbelt? And I'm like, because he doesn't know, like, that he knows he's upside down, but he probably thinks, like, I'm on the ground now. He doesn't realize he's, like, 100 feet up.
Yeah.
And he's, like, very, like, precariously perched on, like, these branches.
Right.
And you could hear, like, this weird movement, and apples are falling and going through the hole in the glass, in the shield or whatever. And his feet are all disfigured, crumpled up.
Yeah. His hands stuck under the chair.
Yeah, it's fucking so good, dude. This scene's so good. So, like, a passerby comes out and is, like, if you could hear me, don't move. Just hang in there. I'm going to get help. I'll be as fast as I can. And we didn't talk about this yet, did we? But he's been having these visions of the seatbelt.
Well, that was in his dream.
His wife. His wife was having these dreams of him having a seatbelt.
Right.
And every time he would take the seatbelt off, she would hear him scream.
Yeah.
And then she would wake
up. In her dream, she was like, Ian, no, not the seatbelt.
But at one point, when he calls home at one point, she's about to tell her.
Yeah.
She's about to tell him the dream.
But he runs out of money.
The phone's just not operating correctly.
In the payphone, so yeah. He's trying to put it in there. He's like, it's jammed, honey. It's jammed. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
But he doesn't.
And she was going to tell him, don't undo the seatbelt if this happens in real life. And it does. And again, the tension in this part, Steph's like, yo, they are fucking, the tension
is
forever, because he like takes his time. It's like a full 10 minutes before his dude decides, okay, I'm going to undo the belt. And when he undoes the seatbelt, the whole car comes dislodged and just fucking smashes and explodes, like falls 100 feet. And then it's like, and then you hear the little kids laughing like,
hey, you fucking dogs got you.
And that's the goddamn end of the movie.
No, it's
right?
Not. No.
What?
Bob Barker comes in and he's like, get your dog spayed or neutered, because this is what happens.
Oh my God.
No, she's outside the gate. It cuts to the daughter.
Oh, they show that she was talking to those fucking Rottweilers.
Yeah, it cuts to her, and the daughter's like talking to the three Rottweilers at the fucking gate in the weird forest.
Yeah.
Because at one point, I didn't understand this part, because at one point it shows that she went to the forest and put her dad's letter and her dad's watch. And her dad.
Well, she had like, remember the one part where she's looking through a photo album and it's like, I love you, daddy. Yeah. And then it's like, daddy, it's like, oh, Joanna, you're my dearest. Love you. Miss you. And daddy, it's this weird photo album.
Daddy, you could give me a cream pie because I can't get pregnant yet.
It's fucking
it's like,
weird.
It's like, but sick
then,
shit like that.
But then at the end of the movie, they do show a clip of like overall, like a shot of like her stuff from her dad in the forest. So. Yeah. Well, so are we supposed to believe that she was so mad that he was going to miss her concert that she went out there and was like, you better take my daddy out?
I mean, I'm not going to tell you what you're supposed to believe. That's up for you to fucking decide, because I can't. I would never try to tell anybody. Like, this is like a movie that's like, there's great tension and atmosphere, but it's slow as hell. And it kind of has this like foreboding kind of like... air about it, kind of like almost like The Shining.
Yeah,
I'm not comparing this movie to The Shining, but I'm just saying it has like this kind of feel like The Shining has.
Well, because you're constantly waiting for like something to happen to explain, because you're like you said, like, so it starts off with this little girl who gets fucking sucked into the woods and killed. So everything that happens in this movie, you're like, what is this going to happen to this girl? Is this leading up to something happening? And no.
Yeah, I mean, there's no closure in this movie. Pretty much everything's left unanswered. So you have all that stuff, like, with the incest you're wondering about. You have many things you're still wondering about when this movie's over. But I kind of like it. Like, that's kind of why I like it.
Yeah.
Like, as I get older, I like when things don't explain. I like when movies don't explain everything to me. I think this movie's kind of pushing it with that. But I still was like, this was a fun find for me, because I never heard of it before. I just randomly stumbled upon it. And I was like, holy shit. And then I kind of looked, read about it a little bit without spoiling anything. And people were like, this is a movie that like nobody talks about, but like it's becoming a cult classic. I don't know if it's becoming a cult classic, but like, I think it has potential to be a cult classic, because it's definitely weird. Has like just very strange. And I do say, like, it reminds me of like an A24 movie before they were doing it.
Yeah.
Like, A24 movies are a little bit more refined, but even still, I don't know. You get like hints at like super demonic forces, but like it doesn't ever spell it out right for you.
Yeah, it doesn't explain anything.
There's a lot of symbolism going on that you're supposed to take stuff from, but I'm not going to tell you what that's supposed to be. But like when they're showing different shots of various things,
like the roses with the petals falling off,
and there's just like they show like a lot of stuff like that where you're just like, I don't know what the director's trying to tell me.
Well, there's
like,
one point
I could watch this movie 100 times and I would still never be able to tell you.
There's one point when like the girl goes to school and the mom is in her bedroom and the mom leaves the bedroom and then it zooms in on this.
That's where the picture was. She took it out.
It's just like a certificate for school.
Because there was a picture in there. She was taking the picture out.
And that was what was in the woods.
And that was in the woods. That's what was in the woods.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I was like, I don't understand what this is supposed to be showing me. That
so, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I recommend if you're, I wouldn't say, this calling this movie a horror movie is kind of like pushing it. I think it's like more like
it's a thriller.
Atmospheric thriller.
Yeah.
But I would say like if you have like a really like deep love of like film in general, I would say check this movie out because like, it's doing some shit, man.
It does.
It's definitely worth a watch. And it has a payoff in the end that even if you're like, fuck this movie, you'll still be happy you watched it. Wouldn't you say that?
Yes.
You'll still be happy you watched it. And it's only like an hour and a half. It's not super long.
It's definitely worth it. Number one, for the beginning, the scene in the beginning, it's fucking awesome.
Right.
And the ending is really good. And then there's just weird shit in the middle that's like,
yeah,
it's fine. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the mechanic scene. It kind of like gives you something to look forward to in the middle.
Yeah.
But I wish like, it kind of like bothers me more because when I see directors do like stuff like that good, like those three scenes in particular, you're like, why didn't you just try to incorporate more of that style into your movie? You could have had this be so good, you know? And I don't know. It's just, I don't know. And you could tell like that guy, it's weird that he was kind of like made this movie and then he was like, that's it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I understand like, you know, I believe when this movie was coming out in the early 80s, it was when Hammer Films was having like a terrible time with their movies becoming like less profitable. And so like they decided to give this guy a chance.
Yeah.
And a lot of those movies were funded by like British grants and stuff like that. So they took one of their movies away to let this guy have a chance making a movie to try something different. And it wasn't successful, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't speak to how successful it was over, you know, when it was released. I was just born in 82. I was just it's little. True. Donald Pleasance, baby myself, learning to eat spaghetti noodles with no sauce.
I mean, I recommend watching it. It's definitely worth it for a...
So do I.
That car crash. I've never seen a car crash scene like that before. I mean, it was like intense, man.
Yeah,
it just went on and on and on.
It's good. It's filmed really well, too. It's edited really well, especially for such an early movie. You don't really see stuff like that. Particularly like in a thriller movie, you know? Like,
and there aren't a lot of characters. I mean, it's just mainly this family.
That's what I kind of, what I was like saying. Like, I like that it's only like takes place over 24 hours because you don't have to get bogged down in other characters. And honestly, there's not really much dialogue either. It's very much based on like just feeling, you know? You're watching gross, greasy people talk.
Or dream.
Pretty much dream, yeah. All right. So that wraps up today's episode of Sodom and Gomorrah. We will be recording Suspiria next weekend, along with an episode of Bite Size Satan. And we also have two new shows in the works. One is going to be called The Incredible Two-Headed Horror Show, hosted by our good buddies, the Mats. And if you don't know them in any respect, you can listen to their podcast that they have, non-horror, The Kickstart with Matt and Matt, to check it out and get a little taste of their flavorings. They're fun dudes, basically just them talking to each other and laughing. They're childhood friends, still buddies to this day. They're adorable. They are one person. That's why I told them they had to call their show on the Salem Satan Network, The Two-Headed Horror Show. So that I expect that's going to be a lot of fun. So you'll see what their format's going to be when it comes about. And also we have another scripted show coming out that's going to be very special to me. I'm going to be super proud of it when it is done. It's still being worked on, but Hell Fidelity is going to be the name of it. And it is going to be a story-based podcast. And I won't say anything else but that. But that episode will be coming in the next few weeks. The Picarist will be returning and you hear him on the intermission of the numbered episodes. That is Steph's cousin, Danny.
Hi, Dan.
He is voicing the Picarist again and we have scripts written for him for each episode. So it should be a lot of fun and we have original stories written for it. more coming at you. And hopefully I'm going to try to release them every other month as I can, because it's going to be a lot more studio work involved with editing and stuff. But I think it's going to be a really, really fun idea and give us some ability to flex our creative muscle a little bit more. Benny is writing or wrote the first story, and it turned out really great. And along with my editing and the script I wrote for Danny, I think it's going to be really fucking awesome. Steph's going to read the first story. Woo-hoo. And then I said more than I was going to.
You sure did. You just said it all.
But anyway, I wrote all the original music for it too. There, you now you know everything. Yeah. So that'll be coming at you soon. Hell Fidelity. We have a logo for it and everything. I'll be dropping all that, and we'll have t-shirts on the website when that comes out. More Cult of Kaiju in the future. We'll be doing that still also.
Can't wait.
We'll get to the next episode of that in, what is it? I guess August.
Yeah, probably August.
Yeah, August we'll get to that. And until next time, we'll see you again in the cities of sin, in Sodom and
Gomorrah.
Because of the end of civilization, the Clamp Cable Network now leaves the air. We hope you have enjoyed our programming, but more importantly, we hope you have enjoyed life.